Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, Pennsylvania State Representative Mark Gergely is going to be here talking about the unemployment compensation problem that is coming up, the fact that the Republicans again want to go after and destroy a key component of the safety net in this country. Which is when you lose a job through no fault of your own, when the job just goes away through one of our bizarre trade policies or just went belly up, the worker doesn't fall and doesn't collapse. There's a helping hand there. And if you look at all the jobs, the millions of jobs that were lost after the Bush calamity that happened in September of 2008, there are a lot of people who needed help, a lot of people who needed that safety net, and it really wasn't there. We had to borrow for it, which, again, there's two questions here. You know, in a time of crisis, we have to take care of those who need it, and we have to borrow. But the other part of this is, shouldn't we start building up a little nest egg and maybe during good times set a little bit aside? Not asking for much, a little bit aside. Maybe have an increase in what employers put into the fund, maybe more than once every 25, 26 years. Just throwing something out there. When we talk to Mark Gergely, that will probably come up. Also on the second hour, Fred McLucky, legislative director for the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, is going to be here. Evidently, our friends in Congress want to increase the weight limit that trucks can carry and also the size of the vehicle. Right now, you can't have a trailer bigger than 53 feet. And it can't carry, the gross vehicle weight can't be more than 80,000 pounds. There are some reports that I've seen that want to go up to trailers of 59 and a half feet and weights upward of 100,000 pounds. I got to tell you, bad idea. But again, big business, they want it. Why? Cuts down on the number of drivers you need. You can put more stuff on a truck and cut down on the labor cost. Again, at a time of high unemployment, they're figuring out how to cut more jobs. Also today on the program, we're going to talk about the big rally that happened, the rally for a responsible budget. 7,000 to 10,000 people on, from our vantage point, look like 10,000. I've heard 7. I've heard 8. I've heard numbers. Some saying 7 to 10, somewhere in there. 1,000 people came to Harrisburg today to say, you know what? We want a budget that's going to make sure that, that our children get the education, the high quality education that they deserve. Our public services are not decimated and that we share the sacrifice. And that, one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting, a guy had a sign saying, I've tightened my belt enough. It's time for someone else to help out. And that will be part of the discussion. We're going to have a couple of people who were there. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, you can check out the website at thericksmithshow.com, or you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. A little history today. Today, back in 1469. Yes, back in 1469, Niccolo Machiavelli was born on this day in 1469. He was an Italian philosopher and writer, a lifelong patriot, I guess you could call him, one of the people who believed that Italy should be unified. He became what they are one of the fathers of the modern political theory. For those of you who have read his famous political treatise, The Prince, will know that he advocated something kind of interesting. This whole idea of a leader, this vision of the ideal leader as someone who is completely amoral, a calculating tyrant, if you will, and the idea of the ends justify the means. So the term Machiavellian is something that people use to describe, personal gain, regardless of the fact that it's either right or wrong. Again, back to the ends justify the means. And the reason I bring this up and the reason I think it's interesting is it's what we are seeing the radical right doing. It's something that they've really taken to, and it's something they like to exploit. They combine Machiavelli with the Ayn Rands of the world to justify their evil cruelty. This idea that we can kick Granny off of Medicare and give her a little piece of paper that maybe, might cover a portion of their health care bill. Or we can, cut kindergarten programs or cut pre-K programs or cut education in general and say, well, you know what? You go out on your own and you'll be fine. We're just helping the individual. We believe in the individual. When they know at the end of the road, it means the destruction of public education in this country, and for a large segment, and understand, when I say a large segment, it means most of the working class will be left out in the cold. You punch a clock, and you live paycheck to paycheck, this voucher bill, this whole education privatization, this is a major screw job for you. This means, think about it this way, if you can barely keep a roof over your family's head and food on the table and the bills paid without going into debt, how is a small voucher going to help you educate your children in the quote-unquote free market? The free market where corporate marauders come in and find a market that they can profit from. Think about the capitalist. Look, I say I'm a capitalist. I think in many instances, that's the best way to go. Education is not one of them. Healthcare is not one of the areas that I think capitalist principles belong in. But think about the capitalist model, where you have people coming in competing based on who can profit. And the entrepreneurs who can manipulate it to where it's less labor intensive, less costly for them, but not for you. Which means they get to profit from it. Think about that for a bit. And, I keep hearing all these people advocating, I want choice, I want choice. You're not going to get the choice that you think you're going to get. I say we strengthen what we've got. Anyway, I've been listening to the right-wing echo chamber, and they have been in hyper overdrive. One, they're trying to rewrite history and praise the little shrub for, and I'm trying to figure this one out. How George W. Bush had anything to do with killing Osama bin Laden is beyond me. I'm still trying to figure that one out, but the right is trying to spin that into place. The other part of this is, the right's trying to figure out how to put Obama down while begrudgingly being complimentary. Outside of their mouth, you got to give Obama credit. But it was the troops. We love the troops. They did everything, and they were terrific, and they're wonderful, and wonderful, and wonderful. And Obama made a decision, and they've got to give him credit. And it's kind of odd because they really don't know how to deal with this. They want to be in attack mode. They want to go after the guy, but his popularity ratings have popped up as we said they would last night. I think everybody knew. So people are looking at him in a little different light. The Republicans don't know how to deal with this. And the reality is, I think most most people recognize the fact that it was the soldiers who pulled this off with accuracy and precision. But at the end of the day, it's the guy who made the call. All of the failures that we've had since Obama has taken office has been placed on him. Why can't the credit be placed on him as well? And I think he's due a little bit of credit here. Look, there's a bunch of stuff that he's done in his time in office that I'm not thrilled about and I harp on and I rail against. The Afghanistan war, like Michael Steele said, it's his war now. Actually, Michael Steele believed that Obama started the war. You figure that one out. I can't. But if he started, it's his war, it's his baby. This has got to be his success. And the fact that anyone is talking about the shrub having anything to do with this, disingenuous, basically just lying. So, again, like I said, if all the failures are heaped on him, the credit has to be as well. Something that... something that George W. Bush could not do. And if you remember, he had a lot of swagger around it. We're going to smoke him out. We're going to find him dead or alive. It's kind of odd that our arch villain was in a mansion. And I can't get that out of my head. The fact that here's a rich guy living in a mansion and we think he's hiding in a cave somewhere. I guess it shows us one of two things. Either our military under Bush was so badly misinformed that we really thought he was in a cave somewhere, sleeping on a rock, or the wealthy in this country, or the wealthy who run this country, didn't want him found. Either way. But you would think at this moment, there would be a sense of unity, and this would bring people together. And I thought it wouldn't for about 24 seconds. It did. But then Cantor came out and, credited Bush. And now you're seeing the Republicans back to their old tactics of fighting, back and forth. And it didn't take long. They are back to their old tactics. Today in the Senate passed a resolution crediting Barack Obama. And again, I don't know why you're crediting George W. Bush with killing bin Laden. He didn't do it. He didn't make the call. I'm sure, and this is what gets me, I'm sure if Bush were in office, what would happen is they would have privatized that. They would have said, like they did before, understand, they had him, they had bin Laden before, Tora Bora, and they sent someone else to go after him. Okay, we're this far, let's send in the number twos, go on. We didn't outsource. Obama didn't outsource. And that's the credit that I think really should be given, the credit that we did it ourselves. Anyway, the president's approval rating has now hit the highest level since 2009, up to 56% in a poll taken late Monday, 38% disapproval, 6% weren't sure. Not quite sure how that works out. How you go, I just decided not to have an idea. But his approval rating up to 56%. And guess what? The Republicans, like I said, back to their old tricks. Today, Saniac Daryl Metcalf, Republican from Pennsylvania, state legislator, he has introduced a constitutional amendment. That's right. A constitutional amendment defining marriage as being solely between one man and one woman. He said, quote, the institution of traditional marriage has never been under greater attack. This not only includes the special interests who want to permanently redefine marriage, but unfortunately the executive branch and the federal Department of Justice who have blatantly and recklessly refused to uphold and defend its constitutionality. Once again, it fails to be the responsibility of state lawmakers to restore the rule of law and carry out the will of the people. Well, I'm one of the people there, Daryl, homophobe. I don't care whether they got married. In fact, whether two people of the same sex get married has nothing to do with me and my wife and my children. It has nothing to do with us. It has nothing to do with the sanctity of my marriage or the honor that I have. Has nothing to do with it. But yet, our good Republicans, once again, in your bedroom. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Pennsylvania State Representative Mark Gurgley is going to be here. Stick around. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you got anything on unemployment, we're back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. University of Missouri, Kansas City's Yancel, one of two labor educators targeted by right-wing media hatchet man Andrew Breitbart, says at no time did she or colleague Don Giljum advocate violence in their classroom. Breitbart's deceptively edited video of a labor studies class taught by Ansel and Giljum falsely portrays them. Giljum was nevertheless forced to resign his adjunct professor job at UM St. Louis, but the Kansas City campus is standing by Judy Ansel.
They stand behind academic freedom, labor education. These are doctored tapes, and they have been reassembled to make us appear to be advocating violence. Neither Don Giljum nor I ever advocated the use of violence in our classes. We think that an exploration of the long history of violence, primarily against working people, that has occurred in the United States is a very important topic to explore.
Ansel says there's no doubt that Breitbart's attacks are politically motivated, part of a broad agenda to weaken unions in the public sector as well as public education.
I see this as an attack on labor studies and on working people, and specifically on the rights of working people in Missouri. This coincides with the final days of the state legislature's consideration of a right to work bill and a paycheck protection bill. And I can't help but wonder whether it's aimed at moving that vote in favor of those who are backing the anti-union agenda.
Does New Jersey Governor Chris Christie want to eliminate teacher tenure or not? Jesse Russell reports.
During a speech at the Harvard Graduate School of Education on Friday, Christie said that the New Jersey Education Association isn't telling the truth when it asserts he wants to eliminate teacher tenure. However, during the governor's State of the State address, Christie said the following.
The time to eliminate teacher tenure is now.
In December, the NJEA unveiled proposals to the tenure system. One of the proposals, which has been dismissed by the governor, would move dismissal cases to an arbitration system. Currently, the cases are handled in court, and the teachers' union believes involving an arbitrator would reduce average case time to less than 90 days. Christie has made a proposal that essentially rewrites the definition of tenure. In his proposal, teachers need to earn the right to not be easily dismissed with little cause. They would need 3 years of solid ratings through an evaluation process based on observation and test scores. They could lose tenure with 1 year of a very poor rating. Even though Christie has called the union thugs, the organization has tried to work with his proposal. However, the NJEA is concerned that the evaluation process may rely too heavily on test scores. As a result of putting so much emphasis on test scores, the end result could be teachers simply teaching to the test.
This newscast made possible in part by the National Education Association and AFSCME. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in wealthy lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line.
Yep, gonna rise up. Gonna have to do something about it, I gotta tell you. You know, it's one of those things. You know, at the end of the day, it's about coming together, and it's about doing what they did today here in Harrisburg. People taking to the Capitol, people taking to the streets. Our quote of the day comes from our friend Tricky Ricky Santorum, who, you know, Tricky Ricky said, when asked if he supported the Ryan budget, said, yeah, I support the Ryan budget plan. I support what he wants to do with Medicare and Medicaid. The only thing I would do, frankly, he said, and he says, I've said it publicly many times, I think we should implement a lot of these things sooner than what he's suggesting. And here's the thing. Recent polls show 73% of Republicans, 73% oppose cutting Medicare. So here's my advice to you there, Tricky Ricky. I say you keep to that platform. Stick to the platform. I got to be honest, I love Rick Santorum, and personally, I kind of hope he takes it the wrong way. The homophobe that he is as well. He'd probably be right there with Metcalf with this defense of marriage act. Oh, we've got to keep the sanctity of marriage. Nonsense. I guess the part of this that gets me is you've got such a good track record when more than half of all marriages between one man and one woman end up in no one man or one woman because they end up getting divorced.
Well, let's be honest. We're talking about Metcalf or we're talking about Senator Santorum. It's about pandering to your base. That's what it's about. Because no one else cares, quite frankly. I think the average American really doesn't care. They're worried about taking care of their family. They're worried about having health care. They're worried about having a job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, I don't think we're going to get State Representative Mark Gergely. I think something came up. So we will try and reschedule that and move on a little bit forward. But the reality is this bill that Scott Perry, House Bill 916, what he's put forth is really seriously destructive to the unemployment compensation in this state. And what I find interesting about Perry's bill, and he's very honest about it, from his press release, in fact, he says the legislation was written with direct input from the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry and the National Federation of Independent Business. No discussion about helping working people. No discussion about how to make sure that we get workers covered. And what I find interesting is this whole frame that the right keeps pushing out there, that all of the people who are unemployed, this frame that's being regurgitated ad nauseum, is that the unemployed are lazy or somehow stupid or they're drunkards or drug addicts or, on and on. And at some point, the rational folks are going to have to take to the streets like we did today in Harrisburg and fight back. I've got Pennsylvania State Representative Mark Gergely on the line. Mark, welcome to the program.
Rick, nice to talk to you again. How you doing, buddy?
I am terrific. I'm looking at this unemployment compensation situation. I'm hearing the date is May 20th. We're going to lose some federal funding if some action isn't taken.
That's correct, sir, and it doesn't look like our friends are so inclined to do the right thing and make this work in the right sense,
Yeah, here's what bothers me, and I'll be honest about it. Today you saw Darrell Metcalf, who I'm not a big fan of, put forth a bizarre bill trying to define marriage as between one man and one woman, and you may be in favor of that as well, I don't know. But we're wasting time on very divisive issues like that when we're not working and helping the people who need our help the most.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Rick. He was also inclined to introduce a birther bill this year, as well as the Protection of Marriage Act, which is just another debacle of his. And Darrell needs to focus in on budget cuts, education, and helping the citizens of Pennsylvania, as you already said.
Yeah, I understand Darrell being about Darrell. I get that. But the sad reality is he's holding up the rest of the body that is supposed to be doing the work of the people. And By the people, I mean some of the folks who are unemployed. After all, if I remember right, help me, because I may be wrong. I doubt it, but I may be. Didn't the Republicans say jobs was the number one thing they were going to do? Yet I've seen nothing to create jobs. I've seen an awful lot to destroy jobs, but not a lot to create.
They have this great mantra this year of the three catchwords are waste, fraud, and abuse, and they've done everything to destroy welfare and the system that it is a safety net. They haven't addressed any singular issue that's created jobs, yet they run around not just saying jobs, Rick. They say jobs, 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 and it's ad nauseum. And yet we haven't done anything yet to create one single new job in this state. It's all about tearing down folks in our society that need help, need safety nets, and need the protection of what a government can do for them.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, but here's the thing. I hate welfare. I hate it with a passion. I hate when we give $4 billion to the oil industry when they're making tens of billions of dollars. I hate when we give $833 million to corporations here in Pennsylvania. I hate the fact that we're not asking the drillers who are stealing our resource to contribute a little bit. I hate welfare.
Oh, you and me both. And you think people are watching us. Well, you know they are. You know the polls are showing it. You know that not having a tax is hurting this whole discussion. Why aren't we taxing Marcellus Shale? Come on, guys. It's the simplest thing. It's the simplest thing we can execute in this Commonwealth right now. And I mean, put some money into the general fund. Build our coffers. Look at the revenues that have come in. Rick, we're not in a recession that we were. We're doing successful again. Let's have good discussions about where the state needs to go and the direction we should take. Let's tax Marcellus. We're creating jobs, but we're giving corporate welfare to them.
Absolutely. And the other big welfare payment that we're giving them is we're allowing them to take the profit out of this state and launder it through a P.O. box in Delaware.
They just joined the Delaware loophole crowd. You know, we're losing over $600 million a year to our Delaware loophole crowd, and they take great pride in shielding them from what's right to the Pennsylvanians that we represent and the taxes that can make their fair taxes that can make our budget shortfalls erased in one fell sweep.
Yep. So here's what the thing is. I've pointed out a whole bunch of welfare programs for you to go and go after with a vengeance. Yet I've got someone like Scott Perry, a Republican from Dillsburg, here in the area, who has proposed House Bill 916, to me, one of the most destructive bills that you could imagine. Again, the whole premise is to steal benefits from people who need it when they're down. Again, I'm infuriated by the fact that we've got people in our government who will kick somebody when they're down.
The Scott Perry bill, to and every level is a disaster from its inception to the hopeful, unsuccessful execution. He wants to make our folks who've lost a job by no fault of their own pay the price and can't even collect a fair share of an unemployment compensation benefit. And Rick, as you know, and I'm sure you've already told your listeners tonight, this isn't an entitlement. We pay into that as much as the businesses pay into that, his employees. And he's making it ride on the backs of employees to fix the unemployment compensation system with this debacle of a bill.
Yeah, and the thing is we keep hearing from the right, and I got to give them credit where credit is due. The radical right wing in this country is masterful at messaging, at bumper sticker sloganeering. They're just masters at it. And they keep pushing this frame that, you know, the benefits are just too generous. Too generous. We have too generous of benefits, and it creates a class of lazy and stupid people. And the reality is according to the ILO, we have the third lowest spending on programs like unemployment, on social programs, the third lowest behind a country like Turkey. I don't think we're that generous.
No, I think those who've paid into the system receive a fair share if they're unemployed. I don't think anybody is doing fraud and abuse in the unemployment system. What I think they want to do, and as you know with the Perry bill, they just want to give businesses an out on every level so that an employee cannot collect a fair share if they do lose their job or have a separation from that company.
You know, it's interesting you brought up fraud and abuse. A left-wing radical liberal group, Goldman Sachs, they studied the issue of waste, fraud, and abuse in unemployment compensation, and they found that only one half a percent of the current 9.4 jobless rate can be explained by the extensions of unemployment, meaning that only one half of a percent of the unemployment of the people who are extended have anything to do with the extensions.
That statistic is absolutely believable because we know the folks that are suffering. We know these folks want to go back to work. You know these folks want to support their families. But our unemployment compensation in Pennsylvania doesn't make anybody rich, as you know. It's just it's a sustainable income. It's a safety net until you find your next opportunity. It helps you pay your mortgages, your utility bills, your car payments, and puts food on the table. Quite simple. That's all it does. It is not to enrich somebody.
You know, I look at this, and I guess the hearing's coming up tomorrow, I guess?
Oh, thankfully it's been delayed. No. Thankfully it's been delayed, and I couldn't be more happy about that. And it gives us some more time to prepare some more amendments to address this issue. And, You know, if we don't succeed in the committee, Rick, we certainly are going to take this fight to the floor aggressively and message this is how bad this really is. And hopefully we do find some friends on the other side with this issue.
I'll tell you where it stopped for me. I read Scott Perry's press release, and I'll read you a line from his press release. I'm sure you've already read it. But it says right in his press release, this legislation was written with direct input from the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry and the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Not one mention of any workers group having any input into this piece of legislation.
And he should have put another caveat quote, and we attacked the American worker directly to pay for this unemployment compensation debacle in Pennsylvania, end quote. He should have put that in there, too, since, he has no participation from the people that participate. It's just, it's unthinkable, and it's disappointing, quite frankly. This is what we face this year. Thankfully, and I've heard you say it already on the show today, and we appreciate it. You know, we do have rallies. We are ramping up the troops. We are getting out the message. I mean, from cuts in public funding to education in my district is just horrific to attack on the American worker. It's up and down the dial this year. We got to step up, folks. We got to realize this.
I mean, it sounded all nice. It sounded all felt fine, well, and good during the election. We're going to cut spending. That's wonderful. And then we find out what they want to cut. They want to cut $1 billion from public education. They want to slash higher education by 56%. And the solution that our governor corporate comes up with, we're just put oil wells on the college campuses. Great idea.
Sorry, it's amusing because you can't get an answer from the guy because he uses pie charts and no press conferences to deliver his message. You know, I was the state rep that lost the school district in 2006, Duquesne Schools. I have some of the poorest school districts in the state in my representative district. I fight hard for education. I was a former school board director. What he's done to poor school districts and these cuts are so draconian that schools are going to shut down. Schools like Stilton out here in central Pennsylvania, schools like Chester Upland out in the east, and schools like Duquesne and Still Rocks out in the west. And I don't think he even cares. I don't think he cares about what the results are for these kids. It's unimaginable how he's taken upon attacking public education.
Mark, you seem to think he cares about those people. No, I truly believe that's the plan. Destroy it. Profit from it. Privatize it. Let the marauders come in and basically, for those who can afford it, education will be there. And for the rest of the kids, well, hey, you know, we always need hand laborers.
Oh, God, I hope you're wrong. I can't, but I hate to say, your thoughts are correct, because there's no answers. I've confronted face to face the Secretary of Education. I've aggressively went after this. I want answers. I demand answers. I'm having a rally in Pittsburgh, my town hall meeting on Thursday. We expect 1,000 people to come to talk about our plan of action, how we're going to fund public education, and how we're going to message this to people, because, Rick, this fight has just begun, and this could only be the beginning of the end for collective bargaining in this state, for unions in this state, and I hope people understand that. I hope this is an agenda nationally for every Republican governor that's following it. Look at what New Jersey's done. Look at Indiana. Look at Ohio. These folks, they have a playbook. Corbett's just behind the playbook because some people are resisting him, thankfully.
Well, worse yet, Mark. Our governor is going to be going to Washington on Monday to be a keynote speaker on the voucher movement, along with Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker.
Oh, that's two peas in a pod, huh?
No.
Tell me about it. What are we doing? Rick, when Corbett put out, and I know you know these statistics, I'm not saying something you don't know, 144 distressed schools. If there's a bit of the 144 distressed schools, 115 of them are in Pittsburgh, Harrisburg, and Philadelphia. Folks, let's fix public education where the problems are. Let's not use vouchers as an excuse to this whole state to fund private education. No accountability. Monies that we can't see where they are spent, and they're your taxpayer dollars. This is the insanity of this. Well, don't people understand that?
Well, no. What people hear, and the right has done a masterful job of framing this. But Mark, you have choice. Granted, there's probably going to be no school for you to go to, but you have the choice. The public school that you can go to or that school that doesn't exist. There's your choice.
Thank you. The school that doesn't exist. In my district, these are the magic schools, the ones that aren't there for these kids to go to. And I want to know where they're going to go.
Well, they don't care. This is about putting more. Look, the people who are funding this are very wealthy folks. And my grandfather always said, and I hate bringing this up too often, but he always said, if a rich person's going to take a buck out of his pocket to convince you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. Because he's not going to take a dollar out of his pocket unless he can profit from it. And that's what this is. The billionaires in this country have figured out that the next profit area, public education, and that's why they're doing what they're doing.
And they're really capitalizing on it. And if you're, and you are following this closely, and I got elected with a colleague, Daylon Leach from Montgomery County. Daylon and I were state reps together in 2002 when he began his career.
Good friend of the show.
I'm sorry?
Daylon's a good friend of the show.
Daylon sent out today, if you have a moment, I could explain this to your listeners, an email to all of us. Daylon's been outspoken against the vouchers. Well, this group that you're talking about, the group's called First Students, has now launched, without an election happening, I launched a public attack on Daylon Leach and his district, just disarming him in every way, in every negative aspect you could think of about how bad Daylon is for students in violent schools. Because Daylon Leach, how dare he not support vouchers in Philadelphia?
Yep.
This battle has already begun, and there's not even an election for Daylon to worry about. This is how desperate they are to get this in Pennsylvania.
And what it also says is how much money they have to throw around and how powerful they are because of the resource. You know, I was reading an article that it's this Davos woman who's behind it, the Amway person. She's yes. the big Amway billionaire, if you will. She's got tons of money to throw around. The family's got tons of money to throw around. They don't live in Pennsylvania, but vouchers is a profit motive for them.
Here come the private schools with the billions of dollars is what I got to say.
Yep, that's all it's about. Mark, I appreciate the time. I got to take a quick break here. Always a great talking to you, and keep up the fight, brother. We need people like you.
And we need people like you too, Rick, and thanks for being such an advocate for our regular folks in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Good luck and God bless.
No, we look forward to having you back. Thanks so much, Mark.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break. Pennsylvania State Representative Mark Gergely. We're going to take a quick break back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Here's the hot new phrase in Washington, shared sacrifice. Sounds nice, but it's really just code for gouging the middle class and the poor. Republican budget whackers use the phrase like a war cry as they slash Medicare, education, and every other public program they hate. President Obama, too, has taken to uttering the phrase as he surrenders to the contrived wisdom in Washington that every American must give up even essential governmental benefits in order to balance the budget. But guess who's not sharing? The corporate powers, which use their lobbyists, lawyers, campaign cash, tax havens, and other tools to avoid giving up anything in the call for national sacrifice. For example, while hundreds of thousands of school teachers are being dumped and our school children shortchanged in sacrifice to the deficit gods, it was recently revealed that General Electric is a sacrifice-free corporation. With almost 1,000 tax lawyers and other specialists in its tax department, this infamous polluter and job cutter has paid exactly zero in income taxes since 2006, despite raking in $26 billion in profits. Indeed, its army of sacrifice avoiders produced a $4 billion tax refund for GE in those 5 years. Meanwhile, it continues to be rewarded with billions of dollars a year in government contracts. In a concise report titled The Artful Dodgers, a watchdog group named Public Campaign uncovers the flagrant tax avoidance scams of a dozen hugely profitable corporations, including oil giants and bailed-out banks, as well as such outfits as FedEx and Carnival Cruise Lines. This is Jim Hightower saying, when your local, state, and national politicos malplatitudes about sacrificing for the national good, tell them to start at the top. To download the Artful Dodgers report, go to publiccampaign.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. the poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yes, and he hates public school. What a nuts. How nuts can this be? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Yesterday, there was a vote by the Benton Harbor City Commission and the mayor of Benton Harbor. And you know, I almost can't believe that we have to talk about this. Evidently, in Michigan, the czar there, because he's no longer governor, the czar, the king of Michigan has decided that he has the power to appoint an emergency financial manager to an area that is struggling. So like here in Harrisburg, if Tom Corbett were actually king instead of just governor, if he were king like Rick Snyder is in Michigan, he could appoint one of these emergency financial managers who would come in, basically throw out the city council, basically kick the mayor out. No more power for anybody except the emergency financial manager, who would have the ability to set aside all contracts, you know, basically undo everything that's done with a magic wand, you know, and of course a little tiara. But the Benton Harbor City Commission and the mayor voted 6-2 against the appointment of this guy named Joseph Harris, saying that stripping them of their power is unconstitutional. And what I find interesting is there are two people who thought, yeah, go ahead, I can't do my job worth a crap, might as well let you do it. It was a 6-2 vote. But again, you know, you look at this and this consolidation of power, it's scary stuff. And it worries me on a number of levels, Jake, because at some point, this playbook has to move to the other states, and maybe Walker does it, maybe Kasich does it, maybe Tom Corbett does it.
Well, two comments. First of all, I do believe that there's some cases in court to challenge that. I have grave reservations about the constitutionality of it. But beyond that, to add a little bit to that story, they've also come in and taken over the school board and said, you know, your contract with the teachers are null and void. To me, that goes against, it smacks of totalitarianism, takes away a basic American principle, that of the right of every American citizen to vote those who represent them in government, be it in the school boards, be it in city council, be it in borough council or township council. Every American should have that right, and this governor is superseding that, and I have some real reservations on a philosophical and a political.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It may be in court, but what damage do they do from now until the 2 years that it gets decided? Because they've already grabbed the mantle. They've already said, we can do this. We're the government. And when the penalties come down, who pays the penalties? We do. I mean, the citizens of Michigan. You know, but if we had someone like that here who's as bad as he is here, we would have to, the taxpayers have to pay for it, which is why I find it quite interesting that, you know, you have people who are so vehemently anti-government. I'm not anti-government. I'm anti their government. And as you've said, very, very much in a totalitarian type manner.
But yet these are the people who supposedly are for less government. Benton Harbor must be ripe for corruption. If you remember a couple of days ago, we also issued a report where there's some allegations of corruption on the part of the state rep. He had some real connections with Whirlpool. Whirlpool was involved with the city of Benton Harbor, and the city all of a sudden said, no, we're not going any further. And Benton Harbor wants to get in there and, for lack of a better word, make a lot of money. And the representative is right in the middle of that, and they're trying to get him out. They're trying to get petitions, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. So it seems that Benton Harbor is just the epicenter right now in Michigan.
Well, we shall see. Well, and then we'll see if the king can keep his throne, because evidently they're going after to recall him as well. So it should be an interesting late summer, early fall. Should be an interesting couple of months there. 2012 should be a very, very interesting year. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right back after this. When we come back, we're going to talk about the rally today. A huge, huge turnout. I thought it was a great day. Thankfully, the rain kept away. And we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job. They're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stupid, get started, get it started, get it started. Let's get it started. Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Today, back in 1886, four striking workers were killed, at least 200 wounded when police attacked a demonstration in Chicago's Haymarket Square. The next day, tomorrow, and we're going to cover this on the program, was the Haymarket Massacre. But, you know, again, these battles where labor has taken to the streets, where they have begun to voice their opinion, demanding their rights. You know, Haymarket was an interesting moment because there were some agent provocateurs possibly in the crowd that caused this. And you look at what happened in Wisconsin with the phony phone call to the governor out there who said, you know, why don't we send in some troublemakers? The governor said, you know, we thought about that. That should make the hairs stand up on the back of everyone's neck. It's scary, scary times. Today, anyway, 10,000 people came out to voice their opinion and tell their governor, you know what, the budget that you've proposed is an abysmal failure. It's a destruction of our society. It's an end to public education. Your privatization scheme are not welcome. And I thought it was a great event. That's why I've asked Alan Redding to come and talk to us a little bit about his moment here. Alan, thanks for taking time for me.
All right, you're welcome. No problem.
You're a union member, right?
That's correct.
AFSCME Council 13, I believe. AFSCME, correct?
Yeah, I'm AFSCME. I'm the treasurer for Council 13, and I'm the treasurer for Local 2624, Council 89 in Hanover.
So what did you think of today's rally?
I thought it was great. I thought it got the people out. Maybe it'll send a message to, I call him the barber. Mr. Corbett, because he wants to go and cut everything. So hopefully the people see, or he sees, that the people are not satisfied with his cuts and maybe he'll reconsider everything when it's all said and done.
Well, he wants to cut everything for you and people like you and me. Right. He doesn't want to cut any of the handouts of the corporate welfare that they hand out to corporations and the drillers and the people who launder their money through the P.O. box in Delaware.
Right.
That's fine.
Yes, and, well, it's funny because we talk about Marcellus Shale, and my brother-in-law, actually, he's a geologist, and he's been working closely with these people up there. And he said that, actually, they laughed at Mr. Corbett because he wouldn't tax them. They thought it was funny.
It is funny because we're already paying the tax.
Right.
It's in their business plan. I don't know how many times I have to scream that before people wake up and go, we're already paying the tax. We're just not reaping the benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you had the opportunity to get up and speak. What's the message?
We're sick and tired of playing these games. We're tired of being the pawns on the chessboard that, you know, everybody's just tired of it. And we feel as though we deserve a fair shake on everything. And, you know, we're a voice in Pennsylvania, too. And we feel as though we're paying taxes and we should be entitled to let them know where this money should be sent to.
You know, how it's allocated. You know, at the end of this, you know, I do believe that when times are tough, you need to have shared sacrifice. I'm in tune with that. I think you probably are, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to see some sacrifice from the folks who are doing wildly well. You look at Wall Street, you look at the drillers, you look at all of these people who are lining their pockets
right.
at the expense of my children's future.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And it's a shame. Well, actually, I went to... After we were done the rally, we came home, and I picked up my daughter at school, and I walked in. I still had my Ask Me shirt on, and I had my my little sticker on there. It said, no vouchers, or the little circle with the line through it. And the music teacher came up to me, and she said, you're my hero. She said, thanks a lot. She goes, I guess you were at the rally today. And I said, yes, I was. And she says, oh, she says, that's so great. She says, it's more people should stand up to them and let them know that we're against the school vouchers and things like that, because I feel as though if you choose to send your kid to a private school, that's your choice, and you should be responsible for it, not everybody else to foot the bill for you.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. But they're selling this as Alan, as you should have the choice to send your children wherever you want.
You do have that choice. You already have that choice. It's just you have to foot the bill, not us.
No. But for me, even if you did vouchers to every child, if you gave every child the winning lottery ticket, you still have to somewhere to punch the winning ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Last question I've got for you. When you look at the crowds today, you saw the enthusiasm. What'd you think?
I was really inspired by all the people that were there. It actually motivated me more. When I was giving my speech, because you could tell everybody was there for one common goal, and I don't know how to say this, but it was great. I bet it was just a blast. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest with you. You know, you feel that unity. You feel that you know, the slogan, "We are one in action." You know, because
right.
when we went to Wisconsin back during the height of all of the stuff that was going on there, there was just this energy in the room. There was this energy throughout the community of people who were locked in, they were engaged, they were ready to participate. And I think right now throughout this country we need that type of engagement, that type of interest, the thirst for information, participation.
Absolutely.
And I think this was the beginning of that. I'm hoping this won't be the last one. I'm hoping this happens throughout the summer so that that teacher that you met, that she can come out and all of her friends can do it as well.
That's right. That was great.
Absolutely. Alan Redding, I appreciate your time, brother.
Sure.
Keep up the fight.
All right. Thank you very much, and you have a good evening.
Thank you. You too. Mm-hmm. You know, again, you know, you look at all of this, and it's, you know, what I liked about this rally is it was workers. It was workers who came out, they had their voices heard, and they said, you know what, this is why it's important. You know, Alan works as a municipal worker. My next caller, Connie Perez, she works at the Norristown State Hospital. She was also one of the speakers here today. Connie, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad you were there to share our joy with us.
Yeah, we had a blast. I think it was a great moment, full of energy and power. I'm curious, what brought you out today?
Number one, it's reality. The problem is that with this budget that Governor Corbett has, now there's not like it's a you're rich, middle class, and poor. Right now, there's no middle class at all. The rich are rich, and the middle class that was is now poor. And all the things that he's attacking is just hurting everybody. So we were all on the same page, and that's why we all feel together. And the union, all of us together, we're family. We look at each other's family.
Yep, which is
so
why.
That's why everybody was so fired up today, and we're just tired, and there's not much more we can take, and we need a change.
Absolutely, and what I keep saying is at some point what's going to have to happen is what happened in Wisconsin where people come to the Capitol and they stay here until they get some resolution.
Exactly. It's not easy out here today, and by myself working at the state hospital, they even had rumors out of downsizing, and we can't afford to have that. Where would our clients be?
Well, again, I don't think they care. The curb is a good place. You look out in California, Kaiser Permanente, they were taking their patients from the hospital, putting them in cabs, and telling the cabbies to go drop them down on Skid Row.
Well, you know, that is really terrible because they are human beings also, and they deserve a right to get the chance to be good members of society, which they can be.
You know,
the way everything is going is just where we cannot have a job at all. Health care, there's so many issues they're talking about. Cutting out public assistance instead of talking about maybe cutting out people that abuse it. As far as all these taxes go, I myself am a single woman living in a home, and the taxes are going up sky high, and you got people of high corporate not being taxed at all.
Yep.
You got other people that are have their mailboxes in Delaware where they don't tax. And that's not fair to us. We all need to be on the same page.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Connie. And you know, the reality is when the T-Twizzlers began their march to prominence or to media prominence, I was with them. You know, I do believe people like you and me, we are taxed enough already, which is their T slogan. I believe that. The problem is when they took that bizarre rightward turn and said, you know, we want to make sure nobody gets taxed, not even the people who can afford it, not the wealthy, not corporations. Like somehow, you know, all of these services, like the Norristown State Hospital, just gonna happen out of the blue.
You know what? The governor really needs to look at things differently, and he could put his stuff in our place and our shoes. If he could do that, then he could see what is causing the problem. Don't make a problem. Fix the problem. Just like now, the different with the budget, the idea of closing kindergarten, that's where I learned how to tie my shoes and count my ABCs and learned how to get along with people through kindergarten. Kindergarten is very important.
And
everyone they can remember has a specific thing or event that happened to them when they were in kindergarten. You don't cut kindergarten out.
Yeah, I got to be honest. My kids are learning to read in kindergarten. My kids learned in preschool how to read, and they learned how to read more in kindergarten. Kindergarten isn't just playtime anymore; it's actual academic activity. And they want to slash that away. Let me ask.
That's right. And then the other problem is raising college tuition. We can't afford it as it is.
I'm right there.
When the people want to get a job, they want some type of a degree, a bachelor's, a master's, an associate. So how can people afford to even send their children or send their stuff when it's so high you can't even get to the front door?
Yep, I'm right there with you.
They have to change.
Let me ask you this: in your 30 years at the Norristown State Hospital, have you seen this level of attack, this level of anger toward workers?
I have never seen it this bad in my whole 30 years. I mean, at work, the place where we all get together, we're all on the same page, and we're there to help the clients. And believe it or not, the clients can make us smile during the day. But the point here with this money thing is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Connie, can you stick around for a second through the break? I got to take a hard break here.
Sure.
When we come back, I want to find out what you think the solutions are, where this governor should be going, what we should be doing. Connie, thanks for sticking around. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
This is why. for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. University of Missouri, Kansas City's Judy Ansel, one of two labor educators targeted by right-wing media hatchet man Andrew Breitbart, says at no time did she or colleague Don Giljum advocate violence in their classroom. Breitbart's deceptively edited video of a labor studies class taught by Ansel and Giljum falsely portrays them. Giljum was nevertheless forced to resign his adjunct professor job at UM St. Louis, but the Kansas City campus is standing by Judy Ansel.
They stand behind academic freedom, labor education. These are doctored tapes, and they have been reassembled to make us appear to be advocating violence. Neither Don Giljum nor I ever advocated the use of violence in our classes. We think that an exploration of the long history of violence, primarily against working people, that has occurred in the United States is a very important topic to explore.
Ansel says there's no doubt that Breitbart's attacks are politically motivated, part of a broad agenda to weaken unions in the public sector as well as public education.
I see this as an attack on labor studies and on working people, and specifically on the rights of working people in Missouri. This coincides with the final days of the state legislature's consideration of a right to work bill and a paycheck protection bill. And I can't help but wonder whether it's aimed at moving that vote in favor of those who are backing the anti-union agenda.
Does New Jersey Governor Chris Christie want to eliminate teacher tenure or not? Jesse Russell reports.
During a speech at the Harvard Graduate School of Education on Friday, Christie said that the New Jersey Education Association isn't telling the truth when it asserts he wants to eliminate teacher tenure. However, during the governor's State of the State address, Christie said the following.
The time to eliminate teacher tenure is now.
In December, the NJEA unveiled proposals to the tenure system. One of the proposals, which has been dismissed by the governor, would move dismissal cases to an arbitration system. Currently, the cases are handled in court, and the teachers' union believes involving an arbitrator would reduce average case time to less than 90 days. Christie has made a proposal that essentially rewrites the definition of tenure. In his proposal, teachers need to earn the right to not be easily dismissed with little cause. They would need 3 years of solid ratings through an evaluation process based on observation and test scores. They could lose tenure with 1 year of a very poor rating. Even though Christie has called the union thugs, the organization has tried to work with his proposal. However, the NJEA is concerned that the evaluation process may rely too heavily on test scores. As a result of putting so much emphasis on test scores, the end result could be teachers simply teaching to the test.
This newscast made possible in part by the National Education Association and AFSCME. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Well, you know, that's it. It is the greed. It's the greed factor. I mean, when we're talking about handing $833 million away to corporations here in the state of Pennsylvania, we allow money to be profits to be laundered through a P.O. box in Delaware, when we're already paying a tax on the oil, on the natural gas that's being sucked from the ground beneath us, yet we don't ask for any of it. I don't know what else you come up with. Greed. And then they turn around and tell us, sorry, we're going to have to cut $1 billion from education. Sorry, we're going to have to cut 56% of the higher education budget. Sorry, we might have to close those state hospitals. It's amazing stuff. And I've got Connie Perez. She works at the Norristown State Hospital. She was also a speaker today at the rally here in Harrisburg. Connie, thank you for sticking around through the break.
Hey, you're quite welcome. I'm so happy that you were there to join us today.
So, you know,
go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. You know, we've kind of laid out what the problem is. We're handing out all this money to the people who are wildly wealthy, doing really well for themselves, and we're taking it from those who are struggling to get by. Where do you see the solutions?
I see the solution by the people that are higher than me in the union who have sat down and went over every detail and have presented a contract in front of Governor Corbett. He needs to listen to all the unions and agree with what we have came up with. There are many proposals, but all the proposals suck. There wasn't one proposal that I heard that would help anybody that's struggling today. But if he would listen to the union and sit down and agree with the stuff that they have presented before him, which they have done fact-finding and everything, that would make us a better place to live.
You know, and again, it's about protecting jobs. It's about protecting workers. But it's also about being sane and being rational and saying, look, you know, we understand things are tough. And when things get better, we're going to ask for something a little bit better. But right now, it's about working together. And I don't see that here in Harrisburg since the Republicans have control of all of the levers of power. There doesn't seem to be any will of compromise. It seems to be more, Connie, that we're going to tell you what's going to happen and you're going to like it.
And that's not the way it is, because all that does is present turmoil. Today we had at least 16 representatives there, and they were listening, and they were clapping, and they were cheering with us, and they know how we feel. And they themselves were shaking their head and agreeing to the things that we said. So that should tell Governor Corbett something. He really should have been out there listening himself. Nobody was going to do anything to him that we weren't supposed to, but we just want him to hear us,
See
how we feel, and listen to us, because we do have the answers.
Last line of questioning I've got for you. You know, when you saw all the folks out there, give me your initial impression when you stepped up to the microphone to give your speech.
When I stepped up to the microphone to give my speech, when I looked around and seen so many people taking their personal time and coming from north, south, east, and west, so all of us could be and stand for the cause, it was just like heaven. It just made you so happy that everybody came out and everybody's on the same accord and everybody's feeling the same way. And we all need a change, because it's not only affecting us people that are working, it's affecting, it is really a problem for the elderly. They may lose their health care. It's a problem for the people that are mentally ill. It's a problem for teachers. It's a problem for everybody, not just us. And when so many people came out, we're all saying the same things. You know, we have to be right.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Connie, thank you for coming out. Thank you for having your voice heard and standing up and being heard. Thank you so much.
And thank you.
All righty. You know,
Take care.
Again, you know, I look at this and the reality being, people did come out, and upwards of 10,000 folks. I think it's a great time. Let's go to line three. We got Lenora on line three. How are we doing tonight, Lenora?
Hi, I'm doing well tonight. I am excited about today's rally.
It was a great moment, and I got to say, you know, the energy was there. I think people are, like I said earlier, I think people are engaged. I think they're locked in and motivated to fight back against this.
No, you know. We have been without a contract for 42 months. We continue to do what we have done for the city. Now it's time for the city to do something for us. You know, we have continually to pick up your trash, to make sure your water is safe, to shovel your snow with the same money that we did almost 4 years ago.
42 months you've been without a contract.
We've been without a contract 42 months. Calculate the millions of dollars that have saved the city by not giving us raise, not giving us increases. It multiplies in millions of dollars, all right, for almost four years that this city has not given us a contract.
Well, what do you say to those who would say the city's in major fiscal problems? What do you say to something like that?
What do I say to it? What I say to it when our mayor can find the money for the police commission to stay, when we have other people in place that can do the same job that he does, and he finds some money without any difficulty, well, he can find money for the workers that work and keep this city running.
There you go. I'm right there with you. You know, this, to me, it's not a spending problem that we have. We've got a major revenue problem because we've allowed corporations to abdicate their responsibility by leaving that window open for them to launder the money out of the state, also allowing all that drilling tax money that we're already paying to end up in the pockets of those who are already doing really well. That's my problem.
But did you know that the city gave Comcast a $100 million tax break to move from 15th Street to 17th Street, the headquarters?
Isn't that amazing?
But they got a $100 million tax break. But, and you tell me we don't have no money?
But you know what that is? You know, that's incentive because we need businesses. You know what I call it? I call it welfare. If we're going to be against welfare, let's be against welfare.
No, we're not against welfare. But you know what? They could have gave them a $50 million tax break and gave us some of that money for the workers that keep the city running, that clean Comcast area, that picks up Comcast trash.
Why do we need to give them anything? They're wildly profitable. They're one of the biggest corporations in the country. They control the majority of the media in this country. Why do we need to give them any tax breaks? What happened to the free market? What happened to, you know, you're on your own? What happened to the competition that the Republicans love to throw up in our face? What happened to that?
I don't know what happened to it, but I'm going to tell you, we're tired of it. You know what I mean? We have two people running for a Democratic mayor, and we're not happy to vote for one, but the vote that we choose to vote for, the one that we have endorsed, is not just a vote for that Milton, it's a vote against Nutter.
Yep. Well, I'm glad you guys came out to Harrisburg today. I'm glad that you're active. I'm just really thrilled to see so many people locked in and engaged. Thank you so much, Lenora.
Thank you.
You know, again, I go back to this, and you go back to this often. It's that engagement that we've been calling for. It's that activity that focusing on what the real problems are instead of all this divisiveness and these wedge issues like Metcalf's marriage is between one man and one woman. What has that got to do with how I'm going to feed my kids? What's that going to do with how I'm going to put food on the table and a roof over their head?
You know, I knew that the ex-governor and Comcast were very close, but I didn't realize they got $100 million just to move their headquarters. That's obscene.
Well, I think that's from the city. I don't know that that's from the state.
Well, I'm sure there's probably a mix in that, right?
I'm not going to say that. I'm just. I don't think.
Does it really matter? I mean, it's taxpayer money that shouldn't be $100 million.
Well, you look where I grew up. There was a place called American Greetings. They make cards. The state of Ohio gave them $93.5 million to stay in Ohio. So then they began shaking down the several suburbs around the southern part of Cleveland, seeing who could give them the best tax break so they could move their headquarters around so that the employees would then commute to a different area. But seeing how much they could shake down from people. What's gone on in this country, too much this economic development that they love to talk about, stealing from other people. That's what this is about. It's about theft. Anyway, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What's your rally story? What are your thoughts? Do we keep giving out big cardboard checks to Comcast? I say hell no. We're back after this.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Here's the hot new phrase in Washington, shared sacrifice. Sounds nice, but it's really just code for gouging the middle class and the poor. Republican budget whackers use the phrase like a war cry as they slash Medicare, education, and every other public program they hate. President Obama, too, has taken to uttering the phrase as he surrenders to the contrived wisdom in Washington that every American must give up even essential governmental benefits in order to balance the budget. But guess who's not sharing? The corporate powers, which use their lobbyists, lawyers, campaign cash, tax havens, and other tools to avoid giving up anything in the call for national sacrifice. For example, while hundreds of thousands of school teachers are being dumped and our school children shortchanged in sacrifice to the deficit gods, it was recently revealed that General Electric is a sacrifice-free corporation. With almost 1,000 tax lawyers and other specialists in its tax department, this infamous polluter and job cutter has paid exactly zero in income taxes since 2006, despite raking in $26 billion in profits. Indeed, its army of sacrifice avoiders produced a $4 billion tax refund for GE in those 5 years.
Meanwhile, it continues to be rewarded with billions of dollars a year in government contracts. In a concise report titled The Artful Dodgers, a watchdog group named Public Campaign uncovers the flagrant tax avoidance scams of a dozen hugely profitable corporations, including oil giants and bailed-out banks, as well as such outfits as FedEx and Carnival Cruise Lines. This is Jim Hightower saying, when your local, state, and national politicos malplatitudes about sacrificing for the national good, tell them to start at the top. To download the Artful Dodgers report, go to publiccampaign.org. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
To turn America blue. Now let's keep it that way. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, I look at this rally, just an amazing, another amazing event. And on the other side of the building, they had a kind of like a counter rally. They had a couple, like 150, 200 people maybe, who showed up. And the more I look at it, the more I find out about it. I think the majority of the folks who were there under false pretense. And if you look at some of the pictures that we've got, I gotta be honest, I think half of the people were there under, at least half, were there under false pretense and weren't even paying attention to what was going on. What they did is they busted a whole bunch of kids. And I think it was under the guise of promoting the earned income tax credit. Which, you know, I think most people are kind of for, if you work, that, you know, you shouldn't have to pay as much taxes and, you know, maybe get a little kickback to help push you along, help small businesses because they're the ones who generally pay the lower wages. And it kind of incentivizes work. And I'm kind of into that. I kind of think that might be a good way to go. But most of the kids there were wearing these shirts that had, you know, something in support of that. And it was an SB1 rally. It was a rally in favor of the voucher. So there's part of me, and we're going to look into this a little bit deeper, there's part of me that looks at this and goes, did they bring those people out under the pretense that they're supporting the earned income tax credit? And then, oh, by the way, we're having an SB1 rally, and oh, you're just going to be the props that we stand around. You know, I look at that, and I got to be honest, I don't put anything past them.
I saw the YouTube. I went into the, you know, the computer and looked at Penn Live with the YouTube, and to say 100, 150 was very, very generous. It was more like 50. And you're right, most of them were kids. And some of them were, you know, like 11, 12 years old. So I have misgivings about all those people being staunch supporters of SB1.
But that's the big Tea Party counter rally. That's the counter protest. We're going to fight back against those people who want public education. How dare they want public education?
And of course, the speakers were Jeff Pacola, you know, the leader in the Senate of SB1, and the black representative from Philadelphia, whose name escapes me,
Anthony Hardy Williams.
No, he's a senator. This is the leader in the House.
They couldn't even get Anthony Hardy Williams to come
out? He might have been there, but I didn't see him speak. What they showed was, you know, Senator Pacola and the black representative. I apologize for not remembering his name, but he spoke also.
Amazing
but it
stuff.
Was, it, compared to the other rally, it was pretty, very, very anemic.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Well, the Republicans are back in Washington. The House had a vote today to deny funding for a central element of Obamacare. and I got to be honest, I think that's a... I think that's a badge of honor. If I were me, I would want everyone running around going, Smith Care! That's right. I finally got something passed. 100 years they couldn't do it. I got it done. I got her done. But, you know, our media doesn't play it that way. Anyway, they've voted today to defund basically the setting up of the marketplace that pretty much all of the Affordable Care Act is set up on. You know, the place, these exchanges where people were going to go to get their health insurance. Because after all, you know, who really wants competition? The bill would rescind some $1.9 billion in grants to help set up these exchanges. The vote largely on party lines, 283 to 183. And most likely, we will see it blocked in the Senate. You know, at least I hope. What I find interesting here, and this is one of these things that you kind of go, what exactly is it that you believe? And Reuters writes, and this is verbatim from their article, even though the bill targets insurance exchanges, the exchange idea is in fact a major element of a House Republican budget plan that would eventually end traditional government-run Medicare and instead provide subsidies to private insurers to provide medical coverage to the elderly. So the Republicans on one hand are saying, well, we're not going to fund Obamacare because we hate him. And nothing he does is possibly right. But on the other side, on the other hand, we're going to set up health care exchanges for the elderly to go buy health care from. Because it works. Reuters goes on to say the Republican budget plan drafted by Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan would have the elderly shop for subsidized medical coverage on insurance exchanges. Ron Pollack, who we've had on the program a couple of times from Families USA, said House Republicans rhetorically exalt the private health insurance market. They ironically, however, plan to defund the creation of such state marketplaces that would enable consumers and small businesses to choose the private health plans that they want. And you go back and you look at this at Obamacare. And it's not the socialist takeover of healthcare that the right keeps ramming down our throats. It's not the government death panels. It's not government control. It's not the government bureaucrats sitting on your lap when you're in the doctor's office with his finger up your nose. No, it's not that. It's basically these exchanges where people go and buy health insurance, like the Massachusetts model that Mitt Romney keeps running away from. So, you know, you got the party of the free market saying, oh, well, you know, we don't want any government involvement. And we don't want these exchanges and we don't want competition because they're really the party of monopoly. Now, they're really the party of profit and not for you and me. And I look at this and the Congressional Budget Office says that by doing what the Republicans want, it's going to save somewhere in the $14 billion range over the next 10 years. And why is it going to save $14 billion over the next 10 years? Because we're just not going to insure. You're going to insure people. So basically, it's all you poor people drop dead. That's the Republican plan for health care. Drop dead. And you look at this and you go, is it any surprise, Jake, that this is what they're after?
Well, I mean, if you remember, Rick, last night I gave a report on just streamlining what we have now, working a little closer to detail to, you know, address one issue, which is the United States is very poor, and that is addressing the fact that a lot of people die from post-operational diseases. If we can do a better job, some of these other countries are amazingly better than us. The estimates were in the next 10 years we can save $50 billion in Medicare just from that. And that's not, you know, that's spending very little money. There's things that Obama is trying to do outside of his health care reform.
You mean Obamacare?
No, that's actually using for-profit hospitals. So, you know, Republicans, I mean, I think the Democrats need to challenge them and say, hey, if you don't like, quote, health care reform act that was passed, tell us yours. What exactly is yours?
Obamacare! Yeah, I wonder if they feel stupid saying that. I mean, really, I wonder if the people who keep preaching that, I wonder if at some point they go, yeah, I feel kind of dumb doing this.
Well, I think maybe at one point, Rick, when they had seniors persuaded that health care reform was going to hurt their Medicare, and there were a lot of seniors. Some of them were retired union members. Maybe going back 2 years, but I think it's really lost its luster. and as more and more people understand. How about those two gentlemen we ran into at, when we had that fundraiser? You know, the one guy said, hey, because of health care reform, I finally was able, to get health care, and I found that I have cancer. It saved my life. He got in a high-risk pool. Another gentleman who was a businessman said, I reduced my cost for providing health care for my people by 50%. I mean, as more and more of those stories go out, more and more Americans are going to accept it.
See, the problem is...
You lie! You hate America!
That's what it is. You lie. You hate America. You and your facts. You and your compassion. How dare you care?
Facts are a disturbing phenomenon at times, aren't they, right?
Yeah, you and your book learning.
I am the Tea Party people.
Oh, man. It gets crazier and crazier every day, I'll tell you. But anyway, going back to this rally, which I thought was a great moment, I thought it was important to show that strength, that unity. And I'm hoping that there will be more of these as we move forward, because I think it's this kind of show that someone's paying attention, that there are people locked in and engaged and motivated that will change some of this destructive stuff. Understand, when the Republicans took over, what they were pushing for, what they claimed they were going to do, what the plan was. In fact, I got the pledge over here. You know, the 48-page pledge. Remember the pledge? 27 pages of pictures, 21 pages of flowery language words, mostly cut and paste from lobbyist pieces, and then, again, over and over and over again, considerable amount of redundancy in the document, if you will. But jobs is what they talked about. We are going to create jobs. Jobs, 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 jobs. And everything that they've done has been the direct opposite of creating jobs. And when John Boehner said, you know, well, you're going to cost us several hundred thousand jobs, so be it. Was his response. And what you got is you got Daryl Metcalf over here, who hasn't come up with a jobs plan other than stealing rights away from workers. Now with his marriage between one man and one woman, one woe man. And again, I not my issue, don't care, but create the jobs. And when the economy's booming and we don't have poverty and we don't have children who may miss out on an education, that other stuff to me is secondary. All that divisiveness, secondary. What we should be focused on, how do we fix the economy? How do we get money back into the coffers? How do we provide the best high-quality education that we can in this country and really begin to change our thinking towards teachers? I mean, it is an absolute disgrace the way we treat teachers in this country. These folks are professionals. They should be treated as such. You know, it's like, you know, like doctors. Doctors are treated with this pedestal status. We should be putting teachers on that pedestal as well. I mean, much like doctors, you know, help us stay well, our children are benefiting from teachers who might be on that pedestal by having a future. That's all I want. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Fred McLuckey. He's a legislative director with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. What they're talking about doing with trucks in this country is just mind-blowing. And stick around. 1-888-520-RICK. Back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-serve sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All union signs and promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Also, if you want to email me, rick at therickssmithshow.com. You know, today, evidently, there was a press conference to endorse this Safe Highways and Infrastructure Preservation Act. What's going on is there's a push by the powers to be at the top, the corporate special interests, to increase the size and the weight of the trucks on the road. Now, I'm telling you, as someone who drove for many years, that is a bad idea on a whole bunch of levels, especially on the safety level. That's why I've asked Fred McLuckie. He's the legislative director for the International Brotherhood of Teamsters to come talk to us a little bit about the about this Safe Highways and Infrastructure Preservation Act and where he thinks we should be going with this as we move forward. Fred, thanks for taking time for me.
Sure, Rick. Glad to be with you tonight.
Explain this to me. You know, there's a push to increase the length of the trailers, I understand, and the weight that can be inside. Can you give me some numbers?
Well, the trucking industry is looking at increasing the truck weights from the current 80,000 pound limits on interstate highways to 97,000 pounds. That's obviously a significant increase. And their argument is that this will cause fewer trucks on the highways. It will increase efficiency and productivity, and it will actually make our roads safer, which are all false assumptions. Anytime there's been an increase in truck size or weight, more trucks have ended up on our highways. Historically, that's been the case, and it's because if you put more cargo in. If you allow more cargo in the trucks, then shipping by truck gets cheaper than by rail, and shippers then decide to ship by truck, and we have more trucks on the highway.
And what kind of length are they talking about? I've heard upwards of 59 and a half feet.
Well, there have been a couple of proposals out there, but for the most part, the industry wants to expand where doubles and triples are allowed to operate currently. Under the freeze that occurred several years back, the states that were allowing operations of triples and doubles on certain highways were grandfathered in. So they're looking at expanding the use of triples and doubles in other states and on other highways.
You know, when I look at this, Fred, as someone who has driven a truck myself, what I see is not only greed. What I see is the company saying, here's an opportunity to cut labor costs. Here's an opportunity to get rid of more drivers, to do the same amount of work and to increase our profit level. Safety be damned. Everything else be damned. And we'll make an argument just to kind of fool the public. But at the end of it, it's a greed motive, in my opinion.
Well, I think you're right. Certainly our highways aren't our current infrastructure system isn't built to handle heavier and longer trucks. Heavier trucks require greater stopping distances. Our highways are overly congested now. Drivers are stressed now when they're driving in heavy traffic. They have to make decisions based on the distances that they know that require an 80,000 pound truck to stop from 60 miles per hour down to zero, and that's in some cases several football fields long. So it's difficult now for drivers to make those decisions, those snap decisions in some cases, and it would only be worse with heavier trucks. Our merging lanes aren't long enough for heavier, longer trucks to get up to speed to merge with oncoming traffic. You only have to look at the skid marks on the Jersey walls around the off ramps now to know that our, most of the off ramps that were built 10, 20, 30 years ago weren't designed for bigger, heavier trucks to use. So we've got crumbling infrastructure. We've got 40% of our, almost 50% of our bridges that are 40 years old or more. We've got one in four bridges that's structurally deficient or obsolete. And, you know, the argument by the industry, well, we'll just throw an extra axle on the truck to mitigate the weight. And it's true if the axle's properly deployed, it can mitigate the weight on a highway, on a flat surface. But weight on a bridge is weight on a bridge.
Yep.
And you can't, no matter how many axles you put on a truck, if it goes over a bridge, that 97,000 pounds is 97,000 pounds on a bridge. And
yeah.
We all know what happened in Minnesota with a collapse of that bridge, and we're just playing Russian roulette with other bridges in this country.
Well, I look at the I-81 bridge here coming into Harrisburg, and you sit on that bridge sometime, and they're doing some work on it now, but you sit on that bridge and you look at all the trucks lined up, and imagine putting 100,000 or 97,000 pounds in every one of those trucks. I could easily see us falling into the drink on that bridge. That's why I think this is a dangerous move.
It is. Vibration from the trucks is one of the causes of structural degradation, and it only increases with increasing weight. We really don't have the resources, and we've been fighting to get a new highway bill in Congress for the last several years. Nobody wants to bite the bullet and raise the gas taxes to finance a new bill, and so we're not going to have newer highways and better bridges in the near future. Not with the deficit that we're facing and the move in Congress to cut spending. So it's really not an opportune time to be putting heavier, longer trucks on our highways.
Yeah, I, living here in Pennsylvania, one of the things we have are pretty good sized hills. And one of my concerns, adding more weight to a truck, as someone, as I've said, who has done this for years, going up one side of it, you're removing obstruction. Going down the other side of it, possibility of being an out of control object.
Absolutely, and you're also talking about a trucking industry that wants to increase the amount of driving time behind the wheel, and the worst possible scenario is having a fatigued driver in a heavier truck or a longer truck that requires even more caution when you're driving and quicker decisions to change lanes or to slow down or to make corrections in your driving.
So let me ask you: have you done any polling around this issue? Have you found done any public polling to find out where the public stands on this idea?
Actually, at the press conference today, there was a poll released that showed 74% of the of Americans disapprove of any increase in truck size or weight, and only about 18% approved. So the numbers are over the top in terms of people opposing heavier heavier, longer vehicles.
So this piece of legislation, the Safe Highways and Infrastructure Preservation Act, I guess pushed forth by Frank Loudenberg, the Democrat from New Jersey, and James McGovern from Massachusetts. This is basically just a stop order, leave things the way they are, if I'm understanding this right.
It basically continues the current freeze on truck size and weights. And what it helps to do is prevent what the industry has been somewhat successful in doing, and they haven't been able to lobby for an increase on the federal level. So they've gone into the states, they've lobbied state legislatures to have the states increase weights on state roads. And so you have heavier trucks traveling on state roads that are even less capable of handling the weight. And then you have citizens and local communities and local officials complaining about the heavier trucks ripping up the roads. And the industry says, okay, well, the solution is, let's get these heavier trucks off these state roads that we've lobbied to increase the weights on, and we'll just increase the weights on the interstate so we can get them off the state roads. So they've been clever in their lobbying strategy of going into the states, getting heavier weights on state roads, and then coming back to the federal to Congress and saying, we've got to get these heavier trucks off these state roads.
Yeah, well,
the very same people that put them on it.
Yeah, the lobbyists that they pay are well worth the money that they spend. Amazing stuff. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Fred McLucky, Legislative Director for the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. You know, one of the other questions I wanted to get to, aside from this, is there's talk of opening the southern border and allowing Mexican-domiciled trucks into the U.S. Here in this area, I have yet to find anybody thrilled about the idea. Why is this a bad idea?
Well, for a lot of reasons, Rick. As you may remember, Congress had defunded the Bush era pilot program that they had instituted to allow Mexican trucks to travel beyond the commercial zones anywhere in the U.S. And they did it because of the safety concerns that continue to plague the Mexican trucking industry. This is an industry where hours of service is an unknown regulation in Mexico. There's no enforcement of hours of service. The qualifications for the Mexican CDL are suspect. Their databases are incomplete and inaccurate. It's been 15 years and they still haven't certified a laboratory to send the drug and alcohol specimen samples for testing to a Mexican lab. They're proposing to send them to a U.S. lab. Beyond that, we have the Mexican drug cartel violence at the border, and what they're proposing is to allow these Mexican trucks to do long-haul service in the U.S. They're basically giving a pass to the Mexican drug cartels to make it easier for them to distribute their product throughout the United States.
Yep. Here's my problem with it. I've got a couple of problems. One, just the structural things that I've heard so far, and maybe you've got more insight, but from the way I've read it, we're going to be the ones end up footing the bill for the drug testing and for the electronic onboard recorders and for all of the record keeping to make sure that their drivers coming in are complying with our laws. Am I accurate there?
Yeah. In fact, there is an industry group that is complaining about the fact that the U.S. taxpayer dollars would be used to equip the Mexican trucks with electronic onboard recorders and GPS systems so that they could monitor the hours of service. But, you know, I pose this question to the DOT officials. If you have a Mexican driver who's never operated under the hours of service regime, he's driving from the interior of Mexico. He reaches the border. He's driven for 6 hours. So technically he's got 5 hours left in his 11 hours driving time before he's supposed to stop and take a 10-hour rest. And here's a Mexican truck driver whose destination is Minneapolis. So I said, you're going to try to convince me that this Mexican driver who's never operated under hours of service is going to stop after his 6 hours and take a 10-hour rest period and then proceed on his way to Minneapolis or Chicago or wherever he's going. And their answer was, oh, yes, we're going to be able to monitor this through the use of these EOBRs and the GPS system.
Oh, yeah. There are always ways around that stuff.
Oh, Absolutely.
But here's my biggest problem. I, as a driver, would, and I got to be honest, I would never go into Mexico. And so this to me is a one-way agreement. Our drivers, people in this country, are not, never. And I think I feel pretty confident in saying I don't think you're going to see any American drivers who are going to go into Mexico out of fear of the laws being much, much different. And as you pointed out, the drug cartels.
You're absolutely right. It's a one-way street. U.S. drivers and companies aren't going to risk the lives of their drivers or the value of their equipment or cargo to go into Mexico. And I even posed that question to a trucking executive here in the U.S. I said, so are you ready to send our trucks to Mexico, your trucks to Mexico? And he said, well, let me tell you, he said, we end up sending some trailer loads to Mexico now, but before they go down there, we take off the new tires. We put on old tires. We take off everything on that trailer that's worth anything, because we know if we send it down there, it's not coming back.
Yep.
And that's the true story. It's still the Wild West down there, and there's little or no enforcement of any regulations, and there's huge problems with safety now with the drug cartels who unfortunately have targeted, U.S. officials, and it's a situation that's not going to get any better.
You know, for me, with my belief structure, the answer is we organize the Mexican drivers, we bring up their wages, and we're all happy together. But the reality is you've got the wild card. You've got a Mexican government who, quite frankly, not very interested in protecting Americans, and because they can't even protect their own citizens. And you've got drug cartels who are basically running the show. I just don't think this is possible. So my last question to you is, what do you think the possibility is that the Obama administration is going to go forward with this? I know he said, the president said he's going to go forward with it, but what do you think the chances of it actually opening up are?
Well, they are moving forward. They've noticed the program in the Federal Register as required under some conditions we wrote into legislation a few years ago, because the Bush era program wasn't transparent at all. But they're intent on moving forward. And rather than challenge the tariffs that the Mexicans slapped on U.S. products because we defunded the program, they chose not to challenge the tariffs. And the only way that Mexico is gonna reduce these tariffs or eliminate them is for this trucking program to move forward. So we're doing everything we can in Congress to educate members and to remind them of the problems. We got some very good votes against the Bush era program several years ago. We've got a lot of new members in Congress now. We've got to educate, but we've got a letter circulating on the House side from Duncan Hunter of California and Dan Lipinski of Illinois. It's a letter to Secretary LaHood opposing the program and asking him not to implement it, and we're gathering signatures on it now. So we're trying to send a message to the administration that this isn't the right time, certainly not to displace more U.S. workers, truck drivers and warehouse workers with Mexican drivers and eliminate those warehousing jobs along the border. The worst possible time in terms of the recession.
Yep. At the end of this, though, this has got to be an opportunity. This is one of those moments where I think, Democrats can reach across the aisle and work with the Tea Party people and say, you know, this is what you guys ran on. Jobs in America, America First, all of that. Here's a good place for that.
Yeah, exactly. And we have pretty good bipartisan support now, but we just need to continue to let members know about this, and I think our message is going to get through in the end.
Yep, I hope so. Fred McLuckie, I appreciate your time, Legislative Director with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Thanks so much.
Always good to join you. Thank
All right.
you.
We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Just go, baby, go. Call back anytime. Have all ready. Have no care. You've been so brave. Have money, covering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
At ESECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012. And we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSEC Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing Lent is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-MOAN-555 or go to pscu.com/life. Get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Our Borowitz Report, Andy Borowitz of the Borowitz Report, writes, with the public attention focused on the death of Osama bin Laden, billionaire Donald Trump huddled with advisors for the second straight day, trying to figure out what kind of stupid, dreaded S-word, to say next. The bin Laden thing has definitely stolen the headlines from Donald, a close advisor and associate Tracy Klugigan had to say. The only way he can grab them back is by doing what he does best, saying something really effed up. Trump's two-day hiatus from spewing messed up, dreaded S-word, again, why with this stuff, is the longest on record, experts say, adding that the pressure on the billionaire to break his silence with something truly crapistic, a new word, and to that end, he has closeted himself with a circle of advisors, including the Reverend Pat Robertson, former NBA star Charles Barkley, and former Aflac voice Gilbert Gottfried. Mr. Trump has drawn up a short list of verbal turds that have potential, including attacking President Obama for overdue library books during his grade school years. But so far, he has failed to come up with a comment on that is both objectionable and ill-informed enough to meet his high standards. Tracy Klugman says, people don't know how much work goes into saying really stupid stuff. Donald just makes it look easy. Elsewhere, in another setback for Al-Qaeda, the terror network confirmed today that Osama bin Laden was the only person who knew the organization's iTunes password. Kind of sad there. And you know what? I think about my iTunes password. I don't think my wife knows mine either. So if I were to go, all of my valuable music would be lost. And if it's not bad enough that Trump has got this problem that nobody's now paying attention to him since the birth certificate is out and bin Laden is dead, nobody's paying attention to that, to the rat head, who really, again, took a a major beating during the press corps dinner, and you had to love it. What I loved was his reaction. Just sat there stone-faced and if looks could kill, all dead. It would be genocide.
But he got a bit. Did you listen to it? I listened to it on TV. And when the president did it, not only did the people laugh, but it was like, ooh.
Everybody turned around
because
look at him,
everybody knew that was a direct shot at the Donald. And the Donald just sat there stone-faced. And I'm sure he didn't say a word, but if you can read his expression, he was not a happy camper. Totally embarrassed. He should have been.
Amazing enough. But it's not bad enough that he's being now snubbed by all of the news outlets. What's really important is that the billionaire class has kind of turned their back on him. In fact, billionaire David Koch recently said, you know, Donald Trump is exposing himself to a lot of attacks. Koch went on to say, as much as I like Donald, he's sort of asking for it. He laughed again and observed that Donald's political positions over the last 10 years have been highly variable and unusual. He's a wonderful guy, said Koch, but I don't think he should run for office. Why shouldn't he run for office? Because he's really not qualified to be president, according to Koch. That, to me, that is the death stab there by the Koch brother. And here's the thing. You know, the Kochs don't believe he's worthy. Does that mean he's off the secret meeting list? Does that mean when they have their little planning sessions on how they're going to divvy up the country that the Donald is no longer allowed or welcome?
But the Donald's ego is so big, I'm sure he'd take a comment like that as an insult, and he'd say, I'll show him. And he's always bragging about his money. You know, I hope he stays in. I hope he forces the Republicans to spend millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars.
He's got money. He don't got Koch money. He doesn't have Koch money. That's the big time. He's got a couple hundred million. They're in the couple of billion range. They got the big bucks. And they've got industry that generates more. Somehow, as a businessman, he's figured out how to go bankrupt twice with casinos. I mean, I always thought casinos... That was a license to print money.
How can you not make money on casinos?
I mean, it's like any card game. The house always wins. At the end of the day, man, they take the vig right off the top. Give me the 2%. Amazing. Amazing stuff. And yet this guy, people are taking him seriously. And, you know, people have been sending me these YouTube videos where they go to these town hall meetings and these T-Twizzler rallies and they interview these folks who, oh, I just love Donald Trump. He's on the news, so that's their guy now. Next week it'll be, you know, Bozo the Clown. Oh, I just love me some Bozo the Clown. He's got good ideas. Which just tells you how weird this whole process is. This whole, hey, look at me process. Not one of the people running for the Republican nomination have any good ideas. It's just dredging up all the old bad ones and giving it a new name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the path to prosperity. No, it's destroying Medicare. That's what it is. That's the goal. Why can't we just call it what it is? It's the destroying Medicare bill. No, it's going to put us back on the path of prosperity. For who? Oh, yeah, all that money we're going to suck out of those people who can't get insurance, all that money that we're going to suck from their families to make sure that they get coverage or better yet, make them pay cash or they die. That's where we're going, folks. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, here's the thing. When we come back in a minute, I want to talk about this voucher thing because, to me, this whole voucher thing, this whole argument why we need to have school choice. Oh, I just want to have my school choice for my little Johnny. I want the lottery ticket. It's going to affect me. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the thoughts around it and some of the bizarre stuff that's going on. We're right back after this. And it all crashes down, and you break your crown, and you put your
class majority.
Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. University of Missouri, Kansas City's Judy Ansel, one of two labor educators targeted by right-wing media hatchet man Andrew Breitbart, says at no time did she or colleague Don Giljum advocate violence in their classroom. Breitbart's deceptively edited video of a labor studies class taught by Ansel and Giljum falsely portrays them. Giljum was nevertheless forced to resign his adjunct professor job at UM St. Louis, but the Kansas City campus is standing by Judy Ansel.
They stand behind academic freedom, labor education. These are doctored tapes, and they have been reassembled to make us appear to be advocating violence. Neither Don Giljum nor I ever advocated the use of violence in our classes. We think that an exploration of the long history of violence primarily against working people that has occurred in the United States is a very important topic to explore.
Ansel says there's no doubt that Breitbart's attacks are politically motivated, part of a broad agenda to weaken unions in the public sector as well as public education.
I see this as an attack on labor studies and on working people, and specifically on the rights of working people in Missouri. This coincides with the final days of the state legislature's consideration of a right to work bill and a paycheck protection bill. And I can't help but wonder whether it's aimed at moving that vote in favor of those who are backing the anti-union agenda.
Does New Jersey Governor Chris Christie want to eliminate teacher tenure or not? Jesse Russell reports.
During a speech at the Harvard Graduate School of Education on Friday, Christie said that the New Jersey Education Association isn't telling the truth when it asserts he wants to eliminate teacher tenure. However, during the governor's State of the State address, Christie said the following.
The time to eliminate teacher tenure is now.
In December, the NJEA unveiled proposals to the tenure system. One of the proposals, which has been dismissed by the governor, would move dismissal cases to an arbitration system. Currently, the cases are handled in court, and the teachers' union believes involving an arbitrator would reduce average case time to less than 90 days. Christie has made a proposal that essentially rewrites the definition of tenure. In his proposal, teachers need to earn the right to not be easily dismissed with little cause. They would need 3 years of solid ratings through an evaluation process based on observation and test scores. They could lose tenure with 1 year of a very poor rating. Even though Christie has called the union thugs, the organization has tried to work with his proposal. However, the NJEA is concerned that the evaluation process may rely too heavily on test scores. As a result of putting so much emphasis on test scores, the end result could be teachers simply teaching to the test.
This newscast made possible in part by the National Education Association and AFSCME. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
Your proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Here's some interesting stuff going on. There's going to be a big push next week in D.C. The American Enterprise Institute's having a forum on school choice, and you've got three Republican governors, like Mitch Daniel, giving these speeches. Our governor, Tom Corporate, he's going to be one of the two governors giving speeches. To address the American Federation for Children, their second summit. Tom Corporate's gonna be there with Scott Walker. So the two peas in a pod. So on Monday, we're planning on going down, to the American Federation for Children and, have our voices heard and tell our governor we're not too thrilled about this. And again, you look at these voucher schemes, and what it is, it's a way to extract money from we, the working people, and put it in the pockets of the corporations. And I think what's going on in Detroit right now is a perfect example of that. The Detroit Free Press reported this morning that there's a plan by the Detroit Public Schools to take 45 of their schools and push them into charter schools by the fall. And this is, you know, this has got all of the big private industry going, oh boy, there are 18 local and national corporations who are coming to and saying, hey, we want a piece of the action. Hey, we want some of it. And at the end of this, what it comes down to is, look, all of these privatization schemes are one thing. One thing. It's union busting. It's getting teachers to work for half the salary. That's where what's going to happen is the state, the city, they're going to pay the same. They're going to pay the same amount for the education that they're paying now, only they're going to have no control. What's going to happen is you're going to have these for-profit institutions pop up. They're going to charge the exact same rate per child, and they're going to pay the teachers half as much. And then when they've sucked all the profit out of it and they can't attract teachers anymore, what they do is they close down. They make education so scarce that the state or the city then says, oh, well, we better increase our spending so that we can attract more of these businesses back. So, again, at the end of this entire road, it means the taxpayers are going to get screwed again. And this is not what we're hearing from the pro-choice, the pro-voucher people. This isn't what we're hearing. We're hearing, oh, it's this wonderful choice, and we're going to give out these lottery tickets that children and families can then choose where they go to school. Well, I got to be honest. I was listening to the local nitwit here in Harrisburg, and he should be this guy, Bob Durgan, is his name?
Yes.
He should be, and I think I'm going to contact PSEA. He should be their spokesman. They should really get Bob Durgan to come out and be the spokesman for the anti-voucher people. Only he will do it in the frame of he's for it. Because he's so uninformed, so ignorant on the issue, that he is speaking out of both sides of his mouth. It's about choice, and families should have choice to go where they want to go to school. We need to give these vouchers to kids so that the parents can decide where they go to school. And then, you know, someone calls and says, hey, well, what about the fact that these vouchers the schools don't have to take them? Well, the schools shouldn't have to take the vouchers because they're a private company, and a private company shouldn't have to be forced to take anybody that they don't want. But what if they got special needs? Well, then they don't have to go there. They should be stuck in the public schools. And I'm going, hey, dimwit, you need to learn the messaging a little bit. And the messaging that's coming out of the right, and sadly, he's right on what's going to happen. It's going to be a situation where you're going to set up these schools, and you better be like us. You better be one of us to get into these schools, or your kid's going to be relegated to a failing school, a school without resource. And heaven forbid that your child have a problem, because you're never going to get into these private schools. And if they do, it's going to be a lot of money. You better dig deep. And if you remember, we talked with Mike Fulmer, your senator, Jake, mm-hmm. and he said, well, this is the civil rights movement all over again. This is a civil rights issue. We should give these vouchers, and these kids can go anywhere they want to go. And the schools have to take it, according to Mike Fulmer, which is BS. They didn't say that anywhere. And this is the kind of information that has to get out, and it's not. The right loves to say, well, this is going to give families choice. What it's going to do is it's going to set up a system where we slice and dice, where we segregate and divide, where we have failure in pockets. And heaven forbid if you live in that area where failure is. And heaven forbid if you can't afford to pull some money out of your pocket or drive your child to the next charter school. And what happens when that charter school closes? Right now, public education is what it is. Your kids have a right to education. These people don't like you to have a right to education. They want to have a right for you to pay for it and not get it so that they can profit from it. Mm-hmm. And that's what this whole deal is. That's what all of this is about. And what I loved is I was listening to the local nitwit, and he was talking about this story that I was going to talk about here tonight in this Paxton school, Middle Paxton Elementary School. This fifth grader woke up the other morning after Bin Laden had been killed and said, Mom, paint an American flag on my face and put the date that he was killed on it and write USA on the other side of my face and, you know, mark me up like I'm going to a baseball game. because he'd watched the baseball game and there was a patriotic display and all of this stuff. And look, I'm not against patriotic displays. In fact, I'm pretty much in, you know, do what you got to do. But the kid went to school, and the school said it's a distraction. It's a distraction because, as the article says, all the kids in the hallway were pointing at him and laughing at him. It was kind of a protect him because at some point you knew he was going to get probably harassed and there would be a fight and there would be some, and then what would happen? So I think the school did absolutely the right thing. But my question is in this privatized world where charter schools and private schools are the ones who are making these decisions, this stuff wouldn't fly. When I went to Catholic school, if you came without your tie pin in, they sent you home. If you came in without a tie or with the wrong socks, they sent you home. There was nothing the parents could say. Do you know why? It's a private corporation, private institution. Government had no say. And you have nowhere to complain to. Because when you go to them and complain, they say, well, just take your kid and go somewhere else. And maybe, Jake, you know, at the end of all of this, maybe what we need is we need to privatize everything and people, maybe we'll stop hearing the complaining. Because, you know, I listen to this and it's so easy to attack public education. It's so easy to attack the teachers. But once we've privatized it, there's no more complaining. You don't like it, there's the door.
Well, there's big money, and this is a story that really hasn't gotten out. I've seen projections of big money that set up these front groups, and they send out money to organizations like we have here in Harrisburg, like the Commonwealth Foundation.
The Tinky
Tank?
And
their endeavor is
to
privatize.
The Tinky Tank?
Privatize, let business, let i.e. corporate hands get their control of that, up to and including public schools. Their ultimate aim, even though they hide, right now they're hiding behind this concept of, well, you want choice, and it's, you know, it's a civil rights issue of you know, the 21st century. Ultimately, the big money wants to get rid of public schools, privatize them totally. It's what their endeavor is.
And, you know, and I've talked about this before. For me personally, given the amount of resource that I have, to be honest, the voucher thing might actually be good for me and my family. And I've talked about this before. I would love to send my kids to a Montessori school. Would love to. There's no guarantee that, given the voucher program, that they would take my kids. No, hold on. For me personally, I have the resource that if you know, I could pay the extra above and beyond, you know, the $8,000 or $9,000 that they're dangling out there. I could pay the extra couple thousand to get them in there. I could provide transportation, get the kids back and forth. For me personally. But what about society? What about being a part of the common good? What about the fact that I may have very educated children, but if the rest of society is left uneducated, what opportunities will there be? And this is where I have this problem, where we're deciding winners and losers on whose parents are able to come up with the resource, whose parents can then do the transporting back and forth, who gets that lucky lottery number to get into these charter schools. You look at the movie Waiting for Superman, and they had this, and I'm sure you've seen it, they had this moment where all the kids are in this auditorium, and they've all got their number, and they're waiting with shaking hands and tears coming out of their eyes, and they got the bingo balls rolling around, and they pick out the magic number. And that child, oh boy, wins! I win! Lottery winner! Woohoo! But everybody else, losers. That's the system we're setting up.
Well, when I grew up, and that was the beauty of public schools, that's why I'm a strong advocate. Everybody was given that, to a degree, they were given that level playing field where you had a base level of education, which allowed you to go on and be successful in life. We were getting away from that. Like you said, we're picking winners and losers. You know, you mentioned teachers. You know, perhaps the disrespect to teachers and the corresponding attacks. Maybe there's a correlation between that and the poor performance of American students compared to other countries that have a lot more respect. And I think that is part of it.
At the end of this, I don't believe it's a teacher problem. I think the teachers are professionals. I think there are a handful, maybe a couple, I think the majority of teachers come and they do their jobs. I think the problem is we have a system, we have a structural problem where we spend way too much time testing and not enough time doing experiential learning. One of the reasons I like the Montessori model is they spend more time hands-on, more time doing, less time testing, following the kids' natural interest level, allowing them to explore, which is why I think days need to be longer, school years need to be longer, so that you have the opportunity to really dig into the things that excite kids and where they can actually dig into it and really explore. I think that's the way to go. Not this, we're going to set up a system with a bureaucracy of who's going to choose that we the people have no accountability over. It's just nuts. But its goal is to destroy the system.
Are you saying Montessori school, given the numbers you gave, it's about 12,000 a year?
Right around 12 from what I understand.
And there are some around here?
There's one. And it would be a long drive for us to get them there that I know of. There's one that I know of. Anyway, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Here's the hot new phrase in Washington, shared sacrifice. Sounds nice, but it's really just code for gouging the middle class and the poor. Republican budget whackers use the phrase like a war cry as they slash Medicare, education, and every other public program they hate. President Obama, too, has taken to uttering the phrase as he surrenders to the contrived wisdom in Washington that every American must give up even essential governmental benefits in order to balance the budget. But guess who's not sharing? The corporate powers, which use their lobbyists, lawyers, campaign cash, tax havens, and other tools to avoid giving up anything in the call for national sacrifice. For example, while hundreds of thousands of school teachers are being dumped and our school children shortchanged in sacrifice to the deficit gods, it was recently revealed that General Electric is a sacrifice-free corporation. With almost 1,000 tax lawyers and other specialists in its tax department, this infamous polluter and job cutter has paid exactly zero in income taxes since 2006, despite raking in $26 billion in profits. Indeed, its army of sacrifice avoiders produced a $4 billion tax refund for GE in those 5 years. Meanwhile, it continues to be rewarded with billions of dollars a year in government contracts. In a concise report titled The Artful Dodgers, a watchdog group named Public Campaign uncovers the flagrant tax avoidance scams of a dozen hugely profitable corporations, including oil giants and bailed-out banks, as well as such outfits as FedEx and Carnival Cruise Lines. This is Jim Hightower saying, when your local, state, and national politicos malplatitudes about sacrificing for the national good, tell them to start at the top. To download the Artful Dodgers report, go to publiccampaign.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. And going on that fascist theme, I found it interesting that one of the articles in the Wall Street Journal published on the whole Boeing thing has caught the ire of South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, which I still think is a great porn name. She has pledged that she's going to do everything she can do to fight efforts to force Boeing to unionize its operations in South Carolina. I have to be honest. I think this has got to be one of the first time, got to be the first time in my lifetime that a sitting governor has decided that she's going to interject herself, or he, for that matter, would interject themselves into a labor situation like this, and then come out against the workers, come out against the people, come out against her citizens, her constituents, in favor of a multi-state corporation who is really pitting state against state. I mean, does that make any sense, really, on any level? And the fact of the matter is that there seems to be almost no repercussion. When you hear her say, I'm going to do what I can do to steal the rights away from my citizens, you've really got to question the person sitting in that office, don't you think, at some level? But I find it fascinating that this is something that's able to go on in this country. I found an interesting report out of the Journal of Commerce. It says that U.S. steel imports totaled 2.5 million tons in March, up 32.5% from February's weak levels and up 19.1% from a year ago, according to government data. The increase, they say, reflected improved market conditions led by increased shipments from North American Free Trade Agreement partners, Mexico and Canada, according to David Phelps, who is the president of the American Institute for International Steel. Now, given that he is the president of the American Institute for International Steel, he would probably be very happy to see a 32.5% increase in the amount of steel coming into our country that we could have built, that we could have created, that we could have sold here ourselves. No. We've decided that we're going to, all those building projects around the country, we need that imported steel. According to David Phelps, a 20.9% increase during the year's first quarter shows continued improvement in market conditions for many steel products. Although he said the non-residential and residential construction markets remain weak, he says that his association is optimistic that the market will continue on a deliberate, slow path of improvement. And he also says it's going to benefit all the suppliers to the market as well as steel consumers. What about the people who make the steel? I mean, again, you know, this is the fact that they're celebrating a 32.5% increase over last month of imports. To me, this is a problem. And this guy, he's all happy about it because he's with the American Institute for International Steel. Stop and think about the name of that for a second. The American Institute for International Steel. A, it doesn't mean anything, but B, it serves two masters. And I don't think that's possible. You cannot possibly look at this country and say, we're going to support this country and the international community. Sorry, can't do it.
And therein lies the big quandary of this nation. We have sold out to corporate philosophy of internationalism at the expense of this country and its workers. And until we face that head on and we take back this country in a very real way, we're going to continue to lose jobs. I hate to say that, but it's a fact. Somewhere along the line, we're going to have to get back to the principle of what's best for America isn't necessarily what's best for corporate America.
Amen, Brother Jake. Amen, brother. Preach the good word.
I try.
But the only way we're going to get around this, and I was looking at some of the lobby numbers. The lobbying reports are out, and for the first quarter of this year, the amount of money being spent on lobbying by corporate America. Now, they love to say, well, you know, it's those big unions, the big labor spending all this money lobbying, and big labor spending all this money. There's not one labor organization on the top 25. And, in fact, I wouldn't think they'd be on the top 50 given the numbers that I've been seeing. Of course, who do you think is the number one lobbying the number one lobbying group in the country, spending over $17 million in the first 3 months.
I would say the AMA or what, Big Oil?
The Chamber of Commerce.
Really?
Chamber of Commerce, followed by General Electric spending over $9 million, AT&T spending almost $7 million, ConocoPhillips over $6 million, and down the list there's Comcast there spending almost $6 million, Blue Cross Blue Shield well over $5.5 million. You go right down the list, you know, Verizon, Big Pharma, the big Hospital Association, the big AMA, Boeing, FedEx, Pfizer, General Motors, Lockheed Martin, Exxon Mobil, all of these big companies who, you know, we keep hearing in the news, you know, look at the money that the big oil people have spent, ConocoPhillips and Exxon and the others, and Royal Dutch Shell, not even an American company, spending money on lobbying our government. Millions and millions of dollars go into shaping our policy. Why do you think the big handouts, the welfare that we're giving to corporate America, never seems to go away? Because they're spending huge amounts of money. This is just obscene. In the first 3 months of the year, they spend that kind of money. You're looking at a couple hundred million dollars. All influencing our politics. Until we figure out how to get this kind of stuff under control, how we come up with some campaign finance rules that are open and transparent. Enough of this, oh, we're going to allow corporate America to spend unlimited sums of money and we can never know who they are. That's got to stop. We have got to stop allowing foreign corporations to lobby our government, either directly like Royal Dutch Shell or through the back door with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the international hit squad there. Who, you know, got busted last time around. They take money from corporations all over the world, and they lobby our government. Why? To influence policy. And it's never good for you and me. It's never good for the working people. Never. And I know people say to me, Jake, all the time. They go, well, without big corporations, you wouldn't have a job. Which is, you know, kind of one of those, where did that come from? First, like there's no other alternative to this big corporation. No one would fill that void. The people who love the free market idea seem to think that no one would fill that void. Someone would fill the void. But it's really a false premise. And they do that kind of stuff all the time.
Well, it's a matter, at the end of the day, you're not going to win that argument. What you got to do is change. You have to change the laws. You have to make it unappealing for corporate America to take jobs overseas, and that is going to be extremely difficult.
And that's where I agree with the Donald. I wish you were sane. I would back a sane Donald. You know, maybe Donald Duck can come out of retirement.
You would back the 25% tax on
I'm in favor of that.
Chinese goods.
I've been calling for that for years. Thank you, Donald, for finally bringing an idea to the mainstream. Maybe those T-Twizzler go, hey, yeah, maybe we could. I have a tire raft.
Again. A tire riff?
Yeah, maybe. Call it whatever you want.
Okay.
Call it an import tax.
I did have a serious question. Is there any bill in Congress that has a realistic chance of has there been a bill at all?
Yeah, there have been a couple. There's been several. Sherrod Brown came out with one, and I forget the name. It was like the Trade Act, it was called. And I forget what the Trade Act
What kind of numbers was he talking? As far as percentage of tax?
I don't remember right off the top of my head. But, again, it was taking into account, you know, the trade deficit that we have with these countries like China. It makes us look at some of the things we do a little differently. I'm in favor of, you know, saying, you know, people that we have a I don't even want a surplus. I just want to be relatively in the ballpark. Our problem is with countries like China and Mexico, we have these huge, massive deficits. And at some point, you know, you got to go, we're getting killed here, folks.
Well, when you start talking, I mean, I've talked to libertarians and conservatives about this, and right away they start accusing you of being a protectionist.
I am a protectionist.
And to some degree, if protectionist means trying to get back to a level, at least something close to a level playing field, you know, they can call you what you want. At the end of the day, we got to do what's best for this country.
Now, the Trade Act is trade reform, accountability, development, and employment. And the whole idea is that you encourage companies to stay here. I encourage them to do that, and you review the existing trade deals, and you renegotiate. You go back and say, okay, you know, we need to tweak some things. Just because we signed it into law doesn't mean that's set in stone. We need to reevaluate. Some things work well, some things don't, and that's part of negotiations. That's part of this ongoing back and forth. And at the end of it, what's kind of frustrating is that there isn't much traction. The T-Twizzlers aren't pushing what we need to be going forward with. I think we need to be looking at some of that.
I believe there was an up-and-down vote on a bill that just for, I believe, 2 years would have taken away, tax benefits. American corporations take jobs overseas and would have done things to encourage American companies to keep their jobs here just for 2 years, and every Republican voted
against it.
No.
Yeah, and at some point you gotta look at that and go, duh.
Never understand it. But I mean, what does it take?
But at the end of it, it comes back down to the individual as well. You know, when you go to the store, and I've done this, you know, you go to the store and buying clothes for the kids for school is a geography lesson. All right, where are your underwear made? Oh, those are made in Honduras. Where's Honduras on the map? Oh, the jeans that they have, those are made in Guatemala. The shirt was made in Sri Lanka. Where's that on the map? You know, a whole outfit is a geography lesson. Nothing seems to be made here anymore. And what I find interesting is most consumers don't seem to care. You know, that thing ABC News did that said, you know, we'll go through and we'll take everything out of your house that's not made in America. And what the people came home to was one vase in the dining room. That was it. Everything else was gone. How can you remain a superpower if you produce nothing? How can you remain a superpower if you're dependent on the rest of the world for your energy, if you're dependent on the rest of the world for your products, if you're dependent on the rest of the world for all the things that we don't need to be dependent for? That's my problem. And it comes back down to these lobbying numbers. It comes back down to the fact that these corporations are spending ungodly amounts of money influencing our politics, influencing our ability to self-rule. It's just, it's angering. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Right back after this.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make
the most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, what's going on in the big town?
Well, what can I say? I mean, we have a situation where we're hearing a lot about Bin Laden news. And we honestly, we tried, I'd say, three different places today. I went to the White House, person who works with security. We went to the CIA. We went to the Defense Department, our correspondent there. Nobody can get the correct answer or the right answer about how many people were actually in the compound, how many were killed, and how many have survived. What we know pretty much from Reuters, and we're not even sure that that's accurate, that they were actually given a tour by the intelligence forces in Pakistan, and there said that a daughter who was 12 or 13 years old witnessed the killing of her father, Osama bin Laden, also said that that was Osama bin Laden, and that there's a male that was probably taken by our forces and may have been one of Osama bin Laden's son. Now, President Obama on this is not saying, and his folks are not saying anything about this. And in fact, they have debated during the day about whether to release this photo or not. Although Leon Panetta, director of the CIA, told Brian Williams in an interview that was broadcast tonight that the picture will come out. It's a question of how or when.
See, if it was me, I wouldn't release any of that stuff.
I wouldn't either.
I would give no one any
reason. Because you're not going to convince the conspiracy people.
You know, the fives you're never going to convince, and you're going to it's going to be used as a recruitment tool. I would not, as much, you know, that part inside of me that you know wants and thirsts for this kind of gruesomeness. I wouldn't do it. I still wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't either. But I think they're bending to some pressure, and of course, what they said is they're worried about the sensitivities. Well, they should be.
Absolutely. I think they have done the right thing up until this point. I think everything has been the right way to go about this. Don't screw it up now. And what I like, what I've kind of been enjoying is the right wing. They don't know how to take this. They don't. I think the right wing doesn't know what to do. They want to attack Obama. They want to go after him. But at the end of the day, he did what Bush could not do. And the spin machine is just.
They can't stand it. They're out of their minds.
And I keep hearing it was waterboarding. Waterboarding did it. And you're pulling their fingernails out and ripping their hair follicles out. That's what got the information. And everything I'm seeing says that's not even remotely close to the truth. Even Rummy says it's not true.
Well, that's right. And Dianne Feinstein gave a conference today. Leon Panetta was very clear that when he was asked, well, you know, when you talk about enhanced techniques, you're talking about waterboarding. He said that is correct. And then he was saying there's no evidence that the information would have been gotten another way.
Yeah, I mean, this is an attempt by the right to rewrite history so that it will shine well on the little shrub. And the reality is he couldn't do it. He didn't want to do it because Superman needs Lex Luthor. You know, every so-called superhero, and he wanted to be the superhero, needs an arch-villain, and he left him out there. And I blame all of these years of not going after him on Bush. So congratulations to Obama. He did the right thing, and he should be praised for it.
Well, yes, absolutely, and I think the White House is going about this very correctly and deliberately. But it is interesting, and they are really, you know, they're giving Obama the right no credit because they're saying, I mean, and here, look how much he could have just gone and bombed them, but he decided to take the risk, be very deliberate about it, and people are always after him for being too deliberative, but because of that, they apparently have the treasure trove and motherlode of information. And Jay Carney said today, he said, we're looking at three areas. Are there any planned attacks? Are there any high-value targets? And what can the United States learn about the Al-Qaeda network? And also, what allowed him to live in this compound? Where was he getting this support network?
Yep, and that's a big question. Here's the other part of this that's kind of gotten, and I think it says a lot about our society that on a certain level, we're celebrating someone being killed. I mean, I hate the guy, not shedding a tear or a thought for him, but as a society, we're celebrating someone being killed. It's kind of weird to me.
I think it's very weird, actually. And I think the White House is doing their very best to look very solemn and not to be in a celebratory mood.
Yeah, exactly. Let's move on to something else. The budget, what's going on with the budget?
Well, the Vice President will begin his budget session this Thursday at the Blair House. Jay Carney at the White House said today that there's $4 trillion over 10 or 12 years that the agreement has been reached. Now, whether it's done over 10 years or 12 years, or they split the difference and do it over 11 years, and the Vice President considers this the first of many meetings. He also said that people need to enter the building that is the Blair House across the street with compromise in their hearts. He said the goal, imperative, and expectations of the American people is shared. He added that the White House has had conversations with senators in and out of the various gangs. but it looks as if, you know, it depends really when and what they're going to cut. And I think there is some appetite on both sides for reducing the corporate tax, however, getting rid of the loopholes. And what they're saying is, yes, America has a very high tax rate compared to other countries, but we have more loopholes. The other countries have, quote-unquote, lower tax rates, but no loopholes.
Yeah, I mean, here in Pennsylvania, they say we have one of the highest corporate net income taxes in the country, yet 75% of the corporations pay nothing. So if you have the highest rate and nobody's paying it, do you really have the highest rate?
You don't, but no. That's what we have the highest rate on paper.
Yeah. You know what I thought when this whole thing with bin Laden, I really thought this would be a moment to begin unifying people, but I'm not seeing that. And I'm really not at all seeing this. The bickering between the Republicans and the Democrats seem to be getting worse now.
Well, it is worse, I think. And I think it's worse because they are taking what normally would have been a solemn, like it was after 9/11, where no one touched George Bush on this. And they're, you know, they waited sort of the requisite 24 hours, and now they're using everywhere they can to go after him.
Amazing stuff. A ceremony today in the Rose Garden.
That's right. The president today honored the Teacher of the Year. In it, he called really for Congress to pass a Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy that was not punitive to non-performing schools, and talked about how much education means to his agenda, and he said we cannot out-compete unless we can out-educate. And so he was very, very clear with that. I always try and go to the Teacher of the Year ceremony. It's very moving.
Did you make it this year?
I did. I was there.
Is it true? You know, is it true that as the Teacher of the Year was leaving the Rose Garden, all the Republicans in the House were lined up, pointing fingers at him, telling that the teacher that they make too much and that they're lazy union members?
Well, I can only be at one place and another, but I'm sure they were saying it because that's pretty much what they always say.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, hey, the Teacher of the Year, perfect opportunity to beat up on teachers and their unions again.
Well, yes, and I know a lot of the union people. I mean, it really is what they're doing is it's just a wholesale attack on education. I'm surprised the local school boards are putting up with it.
Well, at the end of it, they're Republican, and they want to, in my area, they're Republicans, and they want to get elected too. That's what it comes down to. Ellen Ratner, appreciate your time. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Talk to you again tomorrow.
Thank you.
All righty, and find out what's going on across town. What do you got for us?
Yeah, Saturday, May 14th, Rick, is the annual National Association of Letter Carriers Food Drive. The annual National Food Drive this month comes at a time when millions of Americans are still struggling to put food on the table. More than 50 million people, let me repeat that, 50 million people, including about 17.2 million children, live in households that are hungry or are at risk hungry. That's about a 30% increase in 1 year and represents more than one in seven households in the country, about 14.6%. You can help stamp out food on the 14th by collecting canned goods and dry food such as tuna, canned meat, soups, pasta, rice, and cereal, and leaving them in a bag or a box by your mailbox. Your letter carrier will pick them up as they deliver your mail. National Association of Letter Carrier members will deliver the goods to local food banks, to pantries, and to shelters to help needy families in about 10,000 cities and towns in all 50 states in the U.S. The letter carriers collected a record last year of about 77.1 million pounds of non-perishable food. This is the National Association of Letter Carriers' 19th annual food drive, which is held in the second Saturday in May in more than 10,000 cities and towns in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and Guam. In fact, I don't know about you, Rick, but I intend to put a bag out there. Even in our area, there's a huge need. I know we've done stories on food banks in this area, and every year, especially from last year to this year, there's a precipitous rise in the number of families that are at risk, and there's a great need out there, and I intend to get my bag out there, and I hope you do too. Report on NAFTA coming out of Washington. NAFTA has caused, according to the report I have in my hand, about 683,000 jobs and counting. To date, 682,900 U.S. jobs have been lost or displaced since the North American Free Trade Agreement took effect in 1994, according to a new Economic Policy Institute report. The main reason for the job loss is a $97.2 billion trade deficit with Mexico in 1993. 1 year before NAFTA was implemented, the United States had a $1.6 billion trade surplus with Mexico that supported nearly 30,000 U.S. jobs. All states, the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, have lost jobs or displaced to Mexico in the last 17 years, according to Robert Scott, who's EPI's senior international economist. During a phone conversation recently, Scott said NAFTA supporters argued the pact would create jobs in the United States. Unfortunately, backers of proposed trade deals with South Korea and Colombia are making similar claims. But the research has found that each trade agreement would cost thousands of U.S. jobs in the first 8 years. It's estimated that the current deal with Korea would cost another 159,000 jobs. And the Colombian free trade agreement would swallow up another 60. I hope those in Congress can look at reports like this and have second thoughts about supporting those free trade agreements. And right now, Rick, I'm not so sure that those trade agreements aren't going to pass. Pennsylvania Game Commission details gas money plans. This is interesting story coming out of Harrisburg. It ties right into what's happening with Marcellus Shale. Pennsylvania wildlife officials say they'll use about $1.1 million in gas lease money in its operating budget and use the remaining $7 million more to replace lost acreage. Pennsylvania Game Commission said Tuesday most of the money gained from the leases involving state-owned game lands will help fund programs that had to be trimmed due to budget considerations. Last month, the Game Commission approved lease agreements with gas drillers tapping the Marcellus Shale formation. Three agreements were for the rights to gas that can be tapped by wells on adjacent private property. One allows for the construction of three drilling pads on game lands in Tioga County. Interesting approach. I'm not so sure if that's the best way to go, but we shall see. Another interesting story coming out of Pennsylvania government. The Pennsylvania DEP is ending drilling violation approval procedures. If you remember, a couple weeks ago, there was a memo that was found by the head of the DEP who had sent out a memo saying that any violations to the Marcellus Shale natural gas companies by any agent had to be approved by the head of the DEP. It appears that they are, after some intense pressure and criticism by some environmental groups, and the press releases, it looks like, in fact, the Department of Environmental Protection is reversing themselves and saying, no, we will not pursue that. We will go back to the old procedure. Now, whether that stays or this is just a temporary thing, I don't know, but I think it's a good idea, because what they did was an obvious smack at, I think, environmental standards in this state, and it looked like, and in fact, they were pandering to the big money people, and it was good to see that they reversed themselves in that way, right?
That's my report. Plenty of pressure. Plenty of pressure out there.
There was.
Anyway, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back to wrap things up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
My name's Diane. I'm a single mom. I have twin boys who are 19, Alex and Tyler. We were a very close family, and I miss them a lot when they're away at school.
I definitely miss her. Yeah, I mean, she did our laundry back when we were home. Now we got to do it ourselves, so if nothing else, that's why we miss her.
Diane wanted individual health insurance for her sons, but she needed something affordable.
Health insurance is important because all it would take was one accident, and I could lose everything I worked for.
So she did her research and called Georgiana at Capital Blue Cross.
Georgiana was great right from the beginning. She stepped me through the entire process, and the coverage is wonderful. They have a great plan, and it's affordable. I feel like I can sleep at night knowing that my boys are covered.
My mom will always be the smartest one.
Text radio to 74574 for a sample quote. Message and data rates may apply. Your final quote may vary. Please don't text and drive. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show. You can't tell me. We're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wild man say,
revolution starts now. I think it's time for me. And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. It's good to have interaction. Again, I want to go back to this rally today, which I think was a an amazing success. You look at the counter rally on the other side of the building, had a, you know, a couple of people there. And if you look at the pictures of the counter rally, most of the people weren't paying attention because they were there, I do believe, under false pretenses. I believe they were brought down to support the earned income tax credits. And then they found out, oh, it's about SB1. And again, you know, this is how the right does things. They can't be above boards because once you explain where this stuff naturally concludes, most people wake up and go, I don't want that. You know, when you talk about the destruction of public education, I don't know anyone. I really don't know anyone who wants to see the end of opportunity for everyone. Because I think we realize this as a society that educational opportunity is the path to a better life for everyone. And if you cut that off, it could be cut off for me and my family, man. And I don't want that. And I don't think anybody wants that for their family. I don't think education should be a lottery program. I just don't. I don't think it should be, you know, to the one who's willing to jump through the most hoops. I don't think it should be the one who has the most connections. I don't want to go back to the days of patronage. I don't want to go back to the days of who do you know and slipping money under the table. Who wants to go back to that stuff? I'm a fan of oversight. I'm a fan of transparency. I'm a fan of accountability. And I don't care what side of any issue we are. I want it on the table. I want to see what's what. It's that simple.
Well, this whole voucher issue, I think at the end of the day, I think we have a question that we need to answer. Does it make sense to spend, and I think the costs are, the number I'm hearing are $1 billion. Does it make sense to spend that in transition into vouchers? Or take that $1 billion, look at the school system, and emphasize the programs and the procedures, and maybe individualize it on a school basis, the things that have worked, and enhance that, which makes more sense. To me, it makes more sense to take that money and improve a public school system, yes. Does it have its faults? Yes. But I think it can be, with a little bit of effort, I think it can be saved. I think in the end, it must be saved.
Again, it's that whole save thing that I don't think there's anything wrong with the vast majority of public education. What they're doing is they're pushing out the handful of failures and trying to convince people that that's the norm when it's not. You've created again, this whole No Child Left Behind thing is creating a crisis that isn't there. And again, they're very good at creating these crises that then, oh, we have to fix the crisis.
I do believe there are some underperforming school districts, Rick.
There
and I
are,
think to
there
say
are some.
To say otherwise is to ignore it.
There are some, but the problems in those schools are much greater than a silver bullet fix.
But I believe they're fixed.
They're socioeconomic, they're structural, they're problems that much greater resource and time and energy and commitment are going to take to fix. You're not going to fix it with a test. You're not going to fix it with a silver bullet program. It's going to be a long process. It's going to be the process of being committed to it. Well, at the end of the day, the time has run out. Anyway, we'll see you tomorrow night. Thanks for being here.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide that flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array.
Back tomorrow night, but remember, a live show Thursday. The Great Burrito Eating Contest of Cinco de Mayo 2011. Live on the Horn News Stream channel. Should be fun. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Happy birthday again, Susan. Thanks to our blogger Texas Betsy, I hope you are feeling better, much better, well, recovering nicely by now. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, head on RadioNetwork.com. Thanks to John Fox and to Ben Birch. Ben Birch is raising funds at WhiteRoseSociety.org. It's what keeps us all a-going on the technical end of the spectrum.